ready for two guys who can handle the truth.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
But we can. Dave Palumbo, John Romano. RxMuscle.com presents Heavy Muscle Radio. Watch out, bro! This hour of Heavy Muscle Radio is brought to you by ALR Industries. Visit ALRIndustries.com.
Welcome to another episode of Heavy Muscle Radio. My name is Dave Palumbo, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, compatriot in crime, John Romano. We're here at the Palumbo Studio in Seaford, New York, and John, what's going on with the studio you're building over there?
We are in the dwindling days of the Palumbo studio, and we're going to move into the RX Muscle studio. I would say this week, Dave, I just have a little bit of work to do. I got to laminate the countertops and put up some rigging, and we're done.
So probably right after the Nationals, we'll probably be in there.
A little paint? Yeah, we're done. We got to choose some colors and some, we got to choose the laminate type we're going to put on the on our anchor desk. Mm-hmm. And once we do that, it's a matter of one last trip to Home Depot and we're done.
I'm excited. I saw the studio with the wall graphics on it that Chris Zimmerman concocted for us, and it looks really good.
You know, I got to say, I am absolutely blown away by that because who do we have up there? The dude,
Sean Roden.
Sean Roden. He's doing a front double bicep. It is 21 feet from elbow to elbow.
Man, that's crazy.
It's insane. I've never seen a graphic that big in my entire life.
Larissa Rice's boobs don't look too bad either on the wall.
They're like 6 feet long, right behind our heads. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, she's good.
And the colors, I mean, it really, when I first walked into that room after the guy hung him, man, I was like, whoa, I was blown away by how that looked. Yeah, it's going to look so good on camera. You guys out there, you're going to love this shit.
Yeah, wait till we go, when this TV show goes live, as Jimmy Butcher said, we're going to be in good shape.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's only 4 days now, John, till the Brutal Alchemy, Bros versus Pros, $1,000 battle of the biceps between Jeff the Producer and Michael Liberatore. My spine is tingling just thinking about this competition coming up Friday the 13th, only 4 short days away. What are you thinking?
Yeah, you know, I'm looking at Jeff today when I came in, and I noticed once again it was like an eclipse of the sun when he stood up to get a drink of water. The guy, I don't know what people think of Jeff out there. I mean, I know he does all these voices. You know, he's a very funny guy. That you say
he's a very offensive piece of shit. I think so.
Diego hates his guts.
He hates his small little biceps. He has no triceps. He has one trap. And he's ugly
squat.
Too.
And he can't squat.
He can't squat.
Yes.
But the dogs like him.
Yeah.
So I look at him, you know, sort of from all these angles, but then I'm paying attention now lately to what's going on with him and, you know, how he's grown significantly over the last few weeks and how seriously he's taken his competition and how Jimmy the Bull is telling me what an animal he is in the gym. I think if I were Michael Liberatore, an IFBB pro, I would be seriously worried about this guy.
Yeah, I don't know if Liberatore is taking it lightly or not. You know, he's kind of quiet. But Mike's a fierce competitor. You know, like I said, he's won that MB Cyber Classic. You know, he's one of these guys that doesn't talk that much, but delivers. I guarantee he's been training for this thing. I know he hasn't said anything about it or hasn't brought it up very much, but I know he's training his ass off for this. I just know that's the kind of guy he is. He's probably training harder for this thing than he is for the show, the Iron Man he's got coming up.
Looking at Jeff sitting here across the room, I hope so, because if he thinks this is going to be a walk in the park, he's sadly mistaken. and you know, I think that belies the money involved. I think the money involved has got absolutely nothing to do with this at this point, because this is about bragging rights. And if Jeff wins this thing, I'm almost tempted to say when Jeff wins this thing, it's going to be a serious point of contention for any pro bodybuilder out there who's going to take our challenges very, very seriously in the months and years to come.
Well, $1,000 doesn't hurt either, John, because, you know, I don't know any bodybuilder out there, pro or not pro, that can't use $1,000 cash.
Yeah, it's like...
What are you thinking, Jeff? What's your mental state going into this challenge now with only 4 days left?
Mike, despite what happens, you and I are still friends.
Well, no, we're not. This is not a, you're not going to hate each other. I mean, boxers beat each other up and then they go hang out at the bar afterwards. So,
I've been doing this, you know, what I needed to do to make sure I get the curl count up, and you know, everything's looking pretty good.
So no injuries, nothing. Everything's looking good.
Ever since the recovery from the session I had with Jimmy,
yes,
everything is fully healed at this point, and I'm pacing it, and everything's pretty good. Yeah.
So you probably needed that. It toughened you up a little bit.
Right, because I was such a pussy before that, but thank God I got in the gym with Jimmy.
But, you know, not that you were a pussy before that, but, I mean, did it surprise you what the ball
First
was
of
it?
All, it surprised me that he wasn't in the gym for that long, and he still managed to curl the 80s and the 100s the way he did, which is what people don't understand on, you know, on some of the comments that, like, you know, that they've made. This guy wasn't doing this. He didn't want to go in the gym and curl the 120s.
No.
He really didn't want to, but Dave talked him into it. If this guy decides to do the right thing, start eating right, getting on a regular routine, he's going to be up to the 150s in no time. So that's why I picked him, because I knew he was going to tell me some things I needed that I didn't even think of, on like how to hold the bar a certain way, and not just with curls, but with back and with chest even. Too bad, you know, he has no leg tips, but that's fine.
He's like you. He doesn't train his legs.
I know. That's why it's such a perfect match.
Now, you know, Jimmy, even asked me for a bottle of Creolize the other day. So I think he might be secretly going back to lifting again.
Really?
Yeah, I think he's going to do it on his own, not tell anyone, and then he's going to all of a sudden, you know, pop up and say, all right, I'm ready to do the 150s, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, you know, with that Creolize, it'll happen, because that stuff's freaking amazing.
Is it? I mean, I didn't twist your arm to say that. I mean, I've just been giving it to people, and they've been trying it, and I'm telling you, people feel it. They know it's working.
There's like a handful of supplements that you can take where you can actually say, you know, this shit does something. And creatine has always been one of those things.
Right.
But the way you have gotten this stuff to be stable and liquid and as bioavailable as it is, it feels like you're on shit.
Yeah.
It does. I mean, I've only been on it a week, and I looked in the mirror this morning when I woke up, and I swear to God, I go, God, I'm like, I noticed this. I notice that I'm different looking today, okay. You know?
And the great thing is, it's not like a stimulant at nitric oxide thing. It's really all creatine working.
Right.
It's putting it in the muscles where it's supposed to be. And you know what? There's nothing more anabolic than a hydrated muscle.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, a lot of us walk around dehydrated, and I do too, because I don't drink enough fluids. Sometimes, I just don't get what I need. That creatine pulls that fluid right into the muscle cell where it's supposed to be, and it takes it out. And if you get the creatine in the muscle, it takes it out from under the skin, which is where it's not supposed to be.
Right. You know? Yeah. So. I mean, you look like you're back in doing ready to compete again.
People tell me I look like I'm on a ton of shit, which is a compliment to me, because I'm not. You know, that's the funny thing. Anyway, all right. Well, I got a funny story to tell you. You know, I wake up every morning. Okay.
Good.
And you know when you've lived with a woman before, right? I mean,
yeah.
I'm not going to go into the leaving the toothpaste or the cap off the toothpaste or spitting the toothpaste in the sink without running the water. We know that's annoying as shit, and you know, yes, Colette does it, and you know, I'm sure you guys know people that do it too. Probably Jeff does it, you know, but
yes,
not Max.
But I came down to the kitchen today, and on the countertop, which was completely clean the day before because my cleaning girl came and did an immaculate job, and I know the night at five, when I went to bed at 5 a.m, the counters were all clean. There was Nestle's Quick, just the chocolate extract. What's the chocolate stuff called?
The syrup.
Cocoa?
The syrup?
Cocoa. Which is cocoa. That was on the counter. There was Parmesan cheese on the counter. And there was butter spray. Now, John, you being the muscle chef, what the freak could Colette have possibly eaten for breakfast that would entail chocolate, Parmesan cheese, and butter spray? Can you think of anything?
I can only surmise. I'm hoping anyway that she was preparing something for breakfast and something for later.
Chocolate chip pizza.
Chocolate chip pizza. Yeah,
can't figure that one out still.
Wow.
So I got her eating all these crazy things. Then I have two dogs that decided they're on a hunger strike now. They're only going to eat if you actually feed them. The problem is that they only eat wet food now. They won't eat the crunchy food anymore because one of them teeth are not that good, and they won't eat it out of the dish anymore. Now, this is the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life. I have to actually sit there. You've seen it. With my hand holding the wet food out for them to eat like you're feeding a freaking invalid.
It's so funny to see this 280-pound shredded dude with a tank top on his hands and knees on the floor, hand-feeding this 3-pound little Dr. Seuss dog.
Now, the funny thing about this whole thing is the reason I'm putting this out there, John, is because I know we have a lot of various listeners that have a lot of different knowledge, and I'm hoping I'm going to get like a pet psychologist who's going to email us and give me some insight on this.
Caesar,
the one dog, Bella, will not eat. She's the leader. The other one follows her. The other one's starving to death, but will not eat unless she does. So what happens is I say, who wants to eat? We go onto the floor, and I hold out some of the wet food. Abby will not touch the food until Bella eats it. If she thinks Bella wants it, then she's going to eat it. Then she's starved. She'll rip your hand off to get the food. So I have to somehow con Bella into taking the first bite, and then Abby eats, and then Bella gets jealous, and then she eats. And it's like a whole vicious cycle that I have to go through twice a day. So please, anyone out there who has any idea about what the fuck to do here, and don't tell me starve the dogs. They love to tell you in the pet store, just starve them out. Starve them out. No, it doesn't work, because with a 4-pound dog,
you can't starve them.
If they lose a pound, it's 25% of their body weight. They fucking wind up in a coma, you know? So I don't know what to do. Then I have a fish now. You know how the guy who gave us the ball python, right, named Blecky?
Yeah.
Blecky's eating like a champ. He's eating, knocking mice off left and right. Well, he brought me an Oscar for my fish tank.
Like a piranha.
It's an Oscar. It's just a cichlid. Like a piranha. It's kind of like a piranha, but doesn't really have teeth.
Same.
It won't eat for something either. So we have all these hunger strike people in the house. I don't know what the problem with this thing is. I can't figure out what the hell it was. So someone suggested that, you know, the Long Island water is very acidic.
Uh-huh.
So maybe I should, make the water a little more alkaline, change the pH.
You have that thing.
So this is what I did. When I did my water change, I used the alkalinized water. I was putting every time I was filling it with the tank, I kept adding like a couple pitchers of that stuff to hopefully balance out the water acidity. It still hasn't worked because maybe I didn't put enough, and I may have to try it again. But which brings up another point in my mind. I was reading an article in Muscular Development magazine.
What?
Don't really want to mention
fucking
names.
Traitor!
And because someone showed it to me about, you know how Evan is always, you know, Evan Centipani is always talking about water alkalinizers.
Uh-huh.
Now, you know he got that from me, right?
Of course. You're the only one I've ever met in my entire life that has one.
Right. Well, I told him about that. And then, there's some science there. You want to balance the acid wastes out of your body. You know, when you get stressed out, you produce acids. When you work out, you produce lactic acid, okay? When you digest protein, you produce acid wastes. And these acid wastes almost act like, you remember when you had a goldfish bowl when you were a kid and you didn't clean the bowl out? The water got dirty. Well, each little cell in our body is like a goldfish bowl. The way the body neutralizes the acid waste in the body is it uses calcium, which you don't want really the body leaching calcium from the bone. But also, the foods we eat can alkalinize or neutralize these acid wastes. This is an important thing. If you drink alkalinized water, this also has a very good way of neutralizing acids and allowing the immune system in the body to function better. I wrote an article about this for one of my columns back in the day when I worked for that magazine. And it was actually, it was eliminated from my column. And the editor over there said, the boss says that there's no research to back this up, to which I provided many, many, many references, to which he still said he doesn't agree with that whole, it doesn't exist. As far as he was concerned, it's not true.
It's called selective sciencing.
Selective science, right. It was actually one of the only things that was ever censored out of all my columns over the course of probably 5 or 6 years, or 8, maybe 7 years.
Right.
Which was
kind of, not a big enough study.
He didn't agree with it. If it wasn't on his agenda, it didn't go in the magazine. Now I notice an article this month that I don't even get the magazine anymore. Someone brought it over here. I'm not going to mention who.
That prick.
Yeah, that prick. And I was reading it, and now that Robbie Duran is writing this big article about acid neutralization and alkalinization and water filters and all these studies that show that acid neutralization might lead to more muscle gains, which I've been saying for 8 years now, and which was censored on me. So I like to throw this. I like to point out hypocrisy.
I think I've been neutralizing acid with Tums after every meal.
It looks it.
I grow. It worked.
So I wanted to throw that out there. I wanted to somehow segue all this together. And it just goes to show you that, studies have to be interpreted. There's a lot of studies out on the market or out in the scientific community that have no relevance to reality.
Right.
And I think that as a consumer, as the people listening out there have to be aware, you have to read these studies with a grain of salt and realize that most of them mean shit.
Exactly.
So real world logic is where it's at. I mean, empirical data is the most important data.
Of course.
How you see your body responding.
Well, speaking of that, and I want to talk about segues, if you remember in the last After Hours show, we did not this last one, but the one before, where we were talking about drivers and how the Asian population seems to be the most...
I wanted to say that for the WAG show, but go ahead.
I'm just going to tell my story because it happened last night. So, I mean, you know...
Oh, okay. I have a different one.
No, again, this is my story.
All right.
So, you know how I am on my car. You know, it's like the only thing I have left in this world.
Right.
So, you know, I... other than, of course, my adorable little son. But I'm talking about inanimate objects.
Thank you, Dad.
So I'm going to the supermarket. You know, those are notoriously horrible places for, you know, cars that you like because of the shopping carts and the lunatics driving around and everything. Right. So I park, as I always do, in the farthest, most distant spot that I can possibly park and as far away from everybody else as I possibly can. And, you know, I take the walk.
Sure.
So I do this the other night. And I'm sitting there. I'm getting out. I'm getting ready to get out of my car, and in pulls a van, a classic Asian van, because every single body panel's bent, banged, dented, no bumpers twisted, windshield's cracked.
Who told us that they do that on purpose?
Mr. G.
Mr. G said they
from Chinatown. See him in China. It looked like a Chinatown van.
Okay.
So a Chinatown van comes wheeling in. Mind you, there's 700 empty parking spots in this parking lot. Where does this guy park?
Right next to you.
Right next to me, 4 inches from my door. I look at him because I wasn't out of the car yet. I look at him. Are you fucking kidding me? Wait, there's a field here, and you're parking 4 inches from my door. And he saw me looking at him like I was going to get out and kill him, and he moved. But I just wonder what is running through this guy's mind that he
liked your car. Maybe I don't know. He wanted to take a look at it close.
Oh my God! I absolutely couldn't believe it that Chinatown van pulled in with the stereotypical Asian dude driving it, and he parked 1 inch from my car.
He didn't see you. That's why.
Yeah.
Now, Mr. G claims that those panels are all busted in because they do that on purpose so that no one will steal anything in the van.
Dave, I swear to God, the van was white. One door was brown. One door was yellow.
Right.
The bumper was black and twisted. There was no bumper in the back. Two of the windows were cracked. One of them was tinted. It looked like a Frankenstein car. And the rest of it was beat, bang, dented, twisted, mangled. Every adjective for destruction you could ever associate with a vehicle was done to that van, and there was an Asian dude driving.
Well, I'm sure Mr. G was right then, because who the hell would steal that? I wouldn't rob that thing, would you?
He is right. I've seen him in Chinatown all the time. They're all banged up. Two wheels are up on the sidewalk. They don't give a shit.
Now, speaking about cars, my father calls me out the other day. He's you know, he's going to be 80 years old December 5th, so right. He's a great guy. He's a super smart guy. He's definitely my hero and idol in life.
I love your dad.
He's losing it a little bit. And he calls me up and he doesn't know what things are called anymore. You know, he's always got the wrong term for everything. He's like, that's another whole story. But he calls me up. He's like, I need my car pointed up. I'm like, pointed up? What the hell are you talking about? He's like, yeah, that guy, you know, he points up the cars. I need it pointed. He meant detailed.
Actually, that is a correct term from his era.
Yeah,
a masonry wall, a brick wall, or a block wall.
Yeah, he did construction.
Okay, when the grout line in the block when it's coming out and it needs to be fixed, it's pointed. You point it up.
That's where he got it from there. He remembers everything from 60, 70 years ago, but he can't remember anything that happened.
Because he used the point in a trowel. So
that's probably, all right, there you go. You see, I knew you'd have an explanation for that. Now, he's got this, we were supposed to give him this surprise 80th birthday party, but he called me up before anything was even planned. He said, I don't want any surprise parties. He goes, people who have surprise parties, they never have a good time. It's always the people who go to the surprise parties that have the good time.
Plus, the surprise could kill him at his age.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know. But I don't. So he said, well, let's just go out to eat. I said, all right, well, that's easy enough.
Yeah,
I was fine with that. With the, just my sister and, you know, some, you know, just immediate people. Now that the plan has progressed to, because all his friends want to have something, and they figure my father won't leave the house. You know, he'll always have some excuse. So they figure, let's have it in his house. But, you know, my father's at this age where he won't let anyone in the house, like cleaning people, nothing.
Right.
He doesn't want to be disturbed. Everything is stressful. I guess when you get older, just any little, the mailman coming is a stressful experience. That's why they can't do anything, old people, because they're like paralyzed by stress.
Well, plus they like their routine, you know.
My father sleeps till 4 o'clock in the afternoon like Jeff does. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, the routine is that serious. You can clean the whole house, and then when he gets up at four, you can clean his bedroom.
That's why we get along so well. I love you, Dad.
That's why I get along with you. I think it's like I'm hanging out with my father when he was younger, you know. So his friends want to have this party at his house. So my father's friend Ted calls me the other day, and he says to me, "Your father hung up the phone on me." I said, "He hung up the phone? Really? What? You must have said something really fucked up." He's like, "Your father asked me, he said, I want to have this, when we suggested he has a party in his house, he said, all right, well, Ted, you're going to come over with my other friend Vinny, and you're going to vacuum my house." So I said, "My father asked you to vacuum his house?" He's like, "Yeah." He said that would be my gift to him. He goes, "But Dave, I don't vacuum my own house." He goes, "I don't want to go vacuum your father's house." So I told him, "Can't we hire someone? I'll even pay for it." And your father hung up the phone on me. Thought I wasn't being a friend. So I got it. Yeah, my dad is a little out of control. So who do we think we can get over there to clean the house that my father would tolerate? Maybe Jeff could do it for a few extra bucks.
Maybe I can do it for a few more pills.
Diego, maybe, yeah, for a few bottles of Isolize. Yeah, yeah.
I do not take Isolize right now because I'm cutting out the protein for my win. Why are you laughing at me? You said I transformed. Jeff called me a bodybuilder on the board now, and that's official.
I promised Diego after we put up his In the Iron Asylum training video, which was only 6.5 minutes long, because...
But it was great.
It was great. It was great. I have to say, I enjoyed listening to it, and I actually did the interview with Diego. Diego. We had two Diegos in that.
Yes, well, the real one, and then that other voice we heard.
Right, I don't know who that other guy
He's
was.
Some faker bitch.
Now, I promised Diego on the board, John, that if he won his class, that we would do a lifestyle video with him. What do you think the odds of me having to do that are?
I hate when you ask me these questions.
Well, you're good. You're like Jimmy
you
the
can
Greek.
Say it in pesos.
You're asking. I mean, it's like saying, okay, here's a racehorse. What do you think his odds are of winning? Show me the other horses. I don't know.
Well, you got to look. I'm asking you to make an educated guess. You think I'm going to have to do the lifestyle video
you
with
probably,
Diego?
You probably will.
I do not like these odds, Mr. Juan.
Maybe we'll send... who can we send over there to do the lifestyle video with Diego?
Mr. Andros?
How about the other Diego?
How about we send Diego. Mr. G over there to do it
with him? How about we send the other Diego, this Diego?
Doesn't Mr. G's son do video?
Yeah, there
Maybe
you go.
Maybe we should have him do that as like his intro project.
Maybe this time he can film the whole video, not just his half-ass sets.
I thought you said it was great.
I wanted to film the walk-in too. I did not walk-in.
Diego was very upset that we didn't do the walk-in.
You missed the walk-in?
Well, Lee Penman did it for us in the city.
People are complaining.
You missed the part where I did the 225-pound dumbbell curls. Jeff did this bullshit 80 pounds. You know, why are you all laughing at me?
I've noticed that as Diego's got leaner, he's starting to look more and more like a Mayan Indian.
Yeah,
Did you notice that?
He's got that Mayan look going on. His forehead just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Well, it's just he does look like he's got to have some descendancy.
He's definitely Inca, Mayan, right, something. You know, right.
This is why I wear the John Romano skull cap last time.
Yeah, you know, now he's got my skull caps rocking. He's rocking those. Now.
Not to be confused with the Native American Indian that Trey Brewer
right,
is, you know.
Right.
Anyway, all right. Well, we have a great show coming up, John. We have a good friend of mine, Brian Cunningham, who grew up with me and went to the same medical school I did. We went for his master's of public health there. He knows some of the same crazy people I knew growing up, and he knows the guy that I call my guru, Dr. Mike Kaufman, and I guess that was his guru too. And we really learned a lot from this guy. But this guy was absolutely out of his mind, and we got some great stories to talk about. We also have Trey Brewer on, who is gearing up for the NPC Nationals in less than 10 days from today. And, you know, I think you guys are going to get some insight into Trey that you never really knew about. And, you know, Trey's a real complex guy, but he's a little quiet. And I think that the more I've talked to him, the more he's opened up over the years.
Yeah, he's definitely. You know, we've both come to know him quite a bit over the years now, the last couple of years that we've known him. He's a really laid-back dude, really cool, really, you know, really into his groove. And, yeah, I like that we can, you know, elicit some information out of him that maybe you can't really find anywhere else.
Well, I also, before we go to break time, I want to just thank our sponsors, obviously Progenics and Dr. Scott Conley, and of course Arthur L. Ray over there at ALR Industries. You know, without these guys, it wouldn't be a show. But John, let's go to commercial break. When we come back, I'm going to talk about the Sacramento Pro, and we're going to get into our first guest.
All right, see you in two.
This is Heavy Muscle Radio, only on RXMuscle.com. ALR Industries. ALR Industries products are backed by 3 decades of experience in the science and lifelong dedication to bodybuilding from its founder, Arthur L. Ray. In 2001, ALR Industries was created to give the hardcore bodybuilder the edge you need to build the perfect beast. Hyperdrive 3.0 is a synergistic blend of fat-burning herbs which yields the most potent legally available formula on the market today. Hyperdrive 3.0 will burn fat, control your appetite, improve your mood and focus, and give you an energy boost you've never experienced. Restore blocks estrogen, enhances libido, and optimizes free testosterone. You'll be stronger, recover faster, and build muscle like never before. Then fuel your workouts with the great tasting and energy enhancing Hyper Shot. Hyper Shot will boost your athletic performance to new levels, allowing you to train harder, improve your endurance, and get the most out of your time in the gym. Whining is not an option for those who refuse to accept mediocrity. Visit ALRIndustries.com today. When you hit the gym, you set in motion a fundamental set of molecular activation signals and cellular growth mechanisms that deliver your desired gains in mass and strength. The magnitude of those processes, as well as how efficiently your muscles recover force production, can dramatically affect your net progress in a training cycle. Progenics protein supplements interact precisely and powerfully to amplify these pathways to produce enhanced growth responses of 100% or more compared to conventional whey protein sources. And they facilitate full recovery of force production in just 6 hours following the most grueling workout, allowing you to train harder, more frequently, for more dramatic gains. Experience the exclusive metabolic advantage available from Nature's Toolbox and Dr. Scott Connolly, renowned pioneer in applied dairy science and inventor of the original Metrex product. Go to ProgenicsSRG.com and use the code NBR801 to get 10% off the purchase of any single Progenics product.
When the world crumbles around you, will you be ready to fight back? Brutal Alchemy Performance Nutrition's unique line of supplements will help you win the war in the gym. Ancient Strength is a unique blend of 3 creatine esters which will infuse you with the ancient strength needed for the battle at hand. Isolation is a pure whey protein isolate that provides 26 grams of protein in every 29 gram scoop. Attack NO2 is Brutal Alchemy's nitric oxide booster that will increase your pumps and performance. After your battle in the gym, it's time for Onslaught, Brutal Alchemy's comprehensive post-workout drink, providing everything you need to suffuse your muscles, joints, and body with the components to heal, grow stronger, and return to the fray. And when it's time to conquer in the bedroom, you'll need Forged Steel, Brutal Alchemy's male enhancement product. Lead the charge to BrutalAlchemy.com to obtain the essential elements of your brutal transformation. Brutal Alchemy, it's better to be a member of the Horde than to be destroyed by it. German American Technologies. Compete harder with GATT supplements. Need energy? Gotta lose the fat? Jet Fuel is the answer. Want to build muscle? Use Testogen to ramp up testosterone and start adding the size. How about some muscle exploding pumps and an enhanced training experience? You gotta get your hands on some Jet Fuel. Jet Fuel, GATT's newest nitric oxide training supplement that's guaranteed to work the second you try it. Join the team. Visit German American Technologies website now at TeamGAT.com. That's TeamGAT.com. German American Technologies. Compete harder. TeamGAT.com.
Get in D-Mix. That's D-Mix, the world's first energy pump that combines the most essential nutritional elements for overall health with efficiency. Cool and easy to use, D-Mix is the most powerful and unique multivitamin antioxidant energy formula on the market. D-Mix is a nutritional wonder that lasts up to 4 days. D-Mix is available in 3 delicious flavors: coffee, mint, and punch. Each flavor is designed to be taken on its own or added to other beverages. D-Mix, don't drink, just pump. Healthy energy.
Who are the Iron Sirens? The heroes: Susie Curry, Adela Garcia, Jenny Lynn, Crystal Richardson. Who are the Dark Divas?
Gina Aliotti as Diva X, Jen Gates as Shade, Liza Kamstra as Black Lotus, Sonia Gonzalez as Raptress, and their story is told only in Iron Sirens. Iron Sirens is a one-of-a-kind, limited-edition comic book series and is the brainchild of J.M. Mannion. Order your copy of Iron Sirens today before they're gone. Visit IronSirensComics.com. That's IronSirensComics.com to get your copy of Iron Sirens. Iron Sirens. Iron Sirens. RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up-to-the-minute news and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com. Heavy Muscle Radio.
Hey, this is the Game, Triple H from the WWE. You're listening to Heavy Muscle Radio with John Romano and Dave Palumbo.
This hour of Heavy Muscle Radio is brought to you by ALR Industries. Visit ALRIndustries.com.
Welcome back to Heavy Muscle Radio. I'm John Romano, sitting here with my co-host, Dave Palumbo, and of course, Jeff, the producer, and his many voices holding it down in the background. Dave, we had a great weekend this weekend. A couple shows going on, one on either side of the country, and I think we did an amazing job considering we were spread into places we really weren't.
Well, number one, I was out with the whole whack pack at the East Coast Championship in Paterson, New Jersey, hosted by Maz Ali and Tatiana Butler. Had a great time there. They packed this place in the capacity, John. There was people. It was so busy that I couldn't even go in there and sit. It was so hot. There was so many people standing. Maz knows all the cops around the area. There was no place to park. People were parking on curbs, grass. I mean, he did a really great job. I mean, I got to tell you, I'm glad that Maz is back in action again. And I hear next year he's going to be promoting three shows. So I want to thank him for inviting us. Phil Heath was the guest poser with Kevin English and Victor Martinez. We got video footage of all three of those guys posing up on stage and then posing against each other together. And I got to tell you, it's up on the RX Muscle website if you guys want to take a look at this footage. But the most impressive is, number one, Victor, I got to tell you, looks a lot better. He looks like his legs grew in the last couple of weeks. I don't know if he's getting a good rebound off the Olympia. But more impressive than anything is Kevin English. This guy is about 260 pounds, John. Hard. He looks almost bigger than Victor and Phil do.
He is the anomaly of all enigmas, because I see him every morning in the gym, and when I walk in there, and you got to remember, he just won the 202, so he was a 202-pound bodybuilder. He hasn't grown in height at all.
No.
Not that I'm aware of. Okay,
no.
He's just massive.
Yeah,
totally massive at that same exact height. He must have put on 60 pounds in the last couple of months.
58.
None of it is fat.
It's not a month. It's only a month since the Olympia. And, he's got a little water on him. But, I mean, this is a guy who can certainly compete in the Open. I think it's a mistake if he doesn't do the Open next year, because, you know what? He's got nothing to prove. He won the 202. Yeah. Great. But, you know what? He didn't win that much money. I think he can win more money in the Open.
He sure could.
Even if he doesn't win, he's still going to win more money, because the prize money, obviously, is a lot higher. I'd like to see him do the Arnold, to tell you the truth, in the Open. I don't know if he's going to, but that would be a great show for him.
I would love to see him do that, because he is a monster. He is an absolute untapped monster.
Yeah. And Phil Heath looked good too. Phil was, holding his size, and looks like he filled out a little bit. But like I said, Victor probably impressed me the most as far as improvements go. His leg looks good. He looks like he's in a good mental state. I think the restaurant is going well for him. So, kudos to those guys. I mean, they're living the life, man.
Definitely.
Now, the show is won by Rob Ewells, who's a national level competitor. He'll be doing the Eastern USA next week as well as the Nationals. So congratulations to him. And our good friend, the Brazilian, Maria Rita Penteada, she won the women's bodybuilding again. This is a girl who's never competed until she came over to this country. She's Brazilian. She's won every show she's done.
It's that Brazilian genetics that just makes you have to pick them.
That's right. No, she's got a cute body. So congratulations to her as well. But the big news was the Sacramento Pro Show this past weekend, which took place in Sacramento, California. Of course, Ralph DeHaan was our the photographer extraordinaire this weekend. He did some great pictures for us. We got him up real quick. Considering we weren't there, John, I got to tell you, we did very, very well. We got as many hits on our thread, our update thread, and we got a lot of participation. I know you were manning the boards at night. And what do you think about the kind of response we got? We must be the destination place to go now.
Well, I had the best racket going, because not only did we have Ralph DeHaan, you know, sending photos directly to Nick the Stick, who was getting them up there for the night show, but I had Kiyoshi Moody inside. Now, bear in mind, the theater had no internet connection, no reception, so none of the other magazine who was there covering it for their website was able to get any real-time information out there. I had it coming as it was happening. Kiyoshi was texting me, and I was putting it up there on the site. We had the winners up, we had the placings, we had how everybody looked, we had the entire show broadcast basically like we had a correspondent right there with a camera.
That was great. And you know what, most of the placings went up and then the pictures were tagged from my car driving back from New Jersey with, you know, thanks to your little cigarette lighter plug-in thing there,
right?
So
right.
You know, Nick the Stick did a great job tagging two shows at one time, and it worked out well, you know. But I gotta just tell you, let's talk a little bit about the show, because that's really the athletes are the ones who deserve the accolades here.
Right.
Tony Freeman wins this show. I got to say something about Tony. I looked at the pictures. Obviously, I wasn't there, but I talked to a couple people, and everyone would say Tony Freeman wasn't in his best shape he could be in. They've seen him better. But this is just a testament to how good Tony Freeman is. This guy can go into a show at 90% and win the freaking show,
right,
beating some good guys. Craig Richardson's no joke.
Nope.
Robert Petrakowicz is no joke. Chris Dim is no joke. And Ed Nunn is certainly not a joke. And Mark Dudgill winds up finishing in sixth. So, Tony, this just tells you, when this guy is 100%, he's almost unbeatable.
You know, he always, to me, has been a Mr. Olympia waiting to happen. You know, I don't know why he doesn't contain his alliance with you. It's a known fact in the entire industry is that he never looked as good as he looked when you coached him into the show. So, yeah, you know, it's one thing to do it by yourself because you know what you're doing, blah, blah, blah. But there's a definite advantage to having a coach. And it's been proven that you are the best coach for him. And, you know, at the size he's put on now, the amazing improvements he's made, because I know he trains like a dog, he's brought his legs up tremendously from 5 years ago till now. The rest of his body, he still has his tiny waist. He's still an X-man. He hasn't ruined anything. He needs a couple of more improvements. And if he nails his condition the way you were able to get it nailed before, this guy, he is a force to reckon with.
You know what it is, John? I think a lot of these guys miss it. It's a teamwork thing. I think it's more like an energy thing. You know, when you have two guys, you know, that are collaborating, it's an energy thing. Because I don't really think Tiger Woods needs a coach anymore as much as he needs someone who he can consider like his you know, it's like his partner there who's going to tell him the truth.
Right.
That's what I did for Tony more than anything. It wasn't there was any mystery. I think all these guys out there, the Craig Richardsons and you know, Jay Cutlers, and they don't need anyone to tell them what to do anymore. They just need someone to confer with so they can actually trust. And it's that relationship, kind of like what you and I do here on the radio. There's an energy there that we create together because of the fact that we're synergistic and we're in sync with each other. And that happens with coaching and with client as well. You know, some guys like it, some guys don't. There's a lot of guys out there that are just loners that like to do things their own way. You know, they don't want to be told what right. to do or anything like
it's
that.
It's that extra set of eyes, you know, how sure. important that is coming in. Because, you know, the easiest thing in the world to do is doubt yourself, second guess yourself when you're coming into a show. You only have one shot. You're only going to be judged once. It's not like you're going to get a second chance if you fuck it up. You know, and it's just that extra set of eyes, that extra, you know, that extra bit of intellect that really knows the sport and knows what they're doing is a tremendous benefit in something like this.
Right. No, I agree 100%. And just a word on Craig Richardson, who was second. You know, I saw his conditioning was real good.
Yes.
You know, I've worked with him in the past. I know George is working with him now. This is a guy who's got so much potential. I've been saying it all the time, you know, for the last 2 years. If this guy ever trains the way he trains for a show, in the off season.
Yeah.
He's a dangerous competitor. He's a genetic freak. The guy is a team national champion. He's always been able to place top five when he brings his best condition to the stage. He's just not big enough, and that's because he doesn't make the gains he needs in the offseason. He doesn't eat discipline. I think when he gets into the show mode, he gets he starts tasting that the fact that there's money available and that there's the prizes are there. But it's almost too little, too late at some point. So he's not getting any younger. At this point in time, if he doesn't, put the pedal to the metal this offseason and put on the necessary size, he might not have any more years left to do anything. By all means, if he would have been 10 pounds heavier, he would have won this show. He wouldn't be Tony Freeman. That's how good his conditioning was.
Because his condition was better than Tony's, period. Yeah. But Tony just out-muscled him completely. Yeah.
Now, Robert Petrakowicz, who's from Poland in third, this is a guy, he's qualified for another Olympia. People can make fun of or criticize his shape or his structure. But this is a guy who is coming in great condition. His tan is great. He's got a lot of muscle on his body. He's a good poser. I think he's probably the most underrated guy on the circuit right now, just because they like to, take pot shots at the fact that maybe his shape is not as pretty as some of these other guys.
The only detraction to his shape is that he's got if you want to pick nits here, he's got a slightly blocky waist, slightly blocky midsection. But so does Jay Cutler. So, the guy is clearly a polished pro. He's striated from head to toe, hard as nails, always in condition. He's not the prettiest body in the world, but either's Mr. Olympia. So, you got to give the guy some... You got to give the guy some slack. I mean, the guy looks incredible. I don't know if it's because he's European or what the problem is, but as far as size, sheer size and condition go, this guy is the top of the heap.
Yeah. Well, Chris Dim finishes in fourth, which has got to be a great accolade. This is the guy who was almost dead a couple of years ago, and now he's placing top five in an open event. It's great for him. I'm glad to see Dim is back, and I don't know if he'll drop down to 202 again next year. I don't know how close he is to the mark, but he almost qualified for his first Mr. Olympia, I should say. Ed Nunn finishes in fifth. He's another diamond in the rough. Here's a guy who's always usually in shape. I thought he could have been a little drier this year, but this is about as smooth as I've seen him. I don't know if he tried to come in bigger because everyone's telling him he should be bigger, but honesty, how could you put on enough size? And what was it, like a couple months since the last time he competed? It's not going to happen. And unfortunately, I think Nunn would have been better served waiting till next year and just packing on more size. Because he's another Tony Freeman, technically, in the waiting, if he can put on the size he needs.
Actually, according to Kiyoshi, there were a lot of similarities. And in fact, he even thought he looked identical to Tony Freeman at one point. An interesting comment that he made was if you paid attention to the show, you'll know that it was just an absolute aberration in terms of length and the way it dragged on from prejudging to the night show. There was only a couple hour break between the end of prejudging and the beginning of the night show. So it wasn't like saying, well, he looked better this morning or he looked better tonight. But in this case, Kiyoshi was blown away by the change that Ed Nunn made from prejudging to the night show in only a matter of a couple of hours.
Interesting.
Dramatic change, according to Kiyoshi.
Well, maybe he's holding some water and Hani dried him out a little bit. That's probably what happened. But, I think that Nunn could technically... If I were him personally, I would wait till the later shows next year and really spend the next 6-8 months packing on as much size as he could. Because, once again, even when he gets shredded, he's got a beautiful shape, but he's still lacking in some certain areas. Yeah. But, he's a work in progress. I know he's not a young guy, but he should take his time because he's peaking later in his career, and just like Tony Freeman did, I think he's got a lot of good years left in him. So I would put the size on he needs, take his time, come in that kind of grainy conditioning that people are used to seeing him in, and I think this guy could win some shows. Look at Tony Freeman's doing now. Tony Freeman's winning shows at 90%. I don't see why Ed Nunn can't follow in his footsteps. The person who actually, I think was probably the most disappointed in this lineup, I know, was Mark Dugdale, who we had on the show last week. He winds up in sixth. I looked at the pictures, John. He looked to be in really good shape, but he looked like he had some water on his body to me.
I think Mark is one of those unfortunate guys who is too tall to be a big 202 guy, and he's too short to be a big open guy, unless he needs 20 pounds. If he's going to compete in the open, he needs 20 pounds. He needs it all over. I mean, he's shallow in some places. He's got a great, tremendous physique. I mean, he's really well-proportioned. He's got great symmetry. He really gets in good condition, although I've seen him crisper before. Just standing next to guys like Ed Nunn and Tony Freeman and Robert Petrakowicz and Martin Kellstrom, he looks like a little kid.
You know, he doesn't have a big structure. That's what you're really saying. He doesn't have a big structure, and because of that, when he tries to come in too big, sometimes it doesn't look that nice. He loses that symmetrical, pleasing look to his physique that he seems to have at 202. Really, what would be great for Mark was if, remember when they first started, when Silvio won the 210?
Yeah.
At a 210 class, Mark is the champion.
He sure is, man. That's exactly where he needs to be. But
unfortunately, you know, they don't have that. So he's going to have to make a tough choice next year if he wants to drop down to 202. Now, Gregory Atoyan finishes in seventh place here, and Darum Charles winds up in eighth, John. So I guess Darum is just having a lot of problems getting back to, you know, to the point where he was when he was winning shows. You know, he's not coming in as shredded as he was. I don't know what his reasoning, if it's a purpose or he just doesn't have that, you know, he's just a little burnt out. I thought he was going to take off the rest of the year personally and come back, because I think next year he said was going to be his last year competing.
Yeah, you know, Darum, you know, you look at him in, by himself, or you look at him in clothes, and he's just a very impressive, massive, you know, big, round, muscle-bellied kind of guy. And then, you know, it's almost disconcerting to a degree to see a guy that looks that good, you know, be considered the guy who's slipping, he's not winning shows anymore, you know. Look at a guy, to contemplate him being the guy that's on his way down is almost discouraging for some people, because he really does look good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Martin Kellstrom, who to me looked like one of the hardest guys, that finishes in ninth. You know, one of Martin's problems is, and you know, look, he doesn't have the best shape, all right? You know, and you know, people can compare him to someone like myself, maybe in that sense. He's a monstrous guy. He's ripped. He doesn't flow that well, but you know what? He also doesn't pose that well. And yeah, if you look at the pictures, you can see his execution of the mandatories is not what it should be. I've talked to him about this before in the past, and he knows he needs to work on that. It's hard to work on that if you don't have someone there who's constantly correcting you and preventing you from making the same bad habits that you've had in the past. And usually when you get on stage, you unfortunately regress back to those bad habits, you know?
yeah.
So as far as Martin goes, I think he needs a presentation overhaul is what he needs to, and he has to not worry about coming in so over full, because it sometimes spills his physique over a little bit.
Yeah, he definitely has. You look, he's one of those guys you look at and go, God, what's wrong with him? You know, he's
huge, though.
He is huge, but you know how some people just are huge and they don't open up?
Yeah.
You know, maybe because they think they're too huge or whatever. Mm. I don't know. But he needs to open up. He needs to.
His presentation
is just really lacking.
All right, let's talk about the women's just real briefly. We'll run down who won that. In the figure pro division, Christy Totty wins. Cheryl Brown comes in second, who's one of my favorite competitors. When she turned pro this year, I was blown away. This is a woman who has kids. She is just one hot lady, and I don't give out compliments like that too much.
Brownie.
I really like her a lot. I think she's got a great look. I think she's going to be a really good figure pro come next year, and people should look out for her. I'm making a prediction right here.
Mm-hmm.
Finishing in third was Hwang Arsenes, and those three girls all qualify for the Miss Olympia. Personally, I know you and I are a little disappointed.
Yeah.
We thought that Julie Kula, who finishes in fourth, really should have snuck into that top three group there. I don't know how they neglected not to put her there.
I don't know,
because weren't your reports coming in after from the place saying that Julie looked like she was going to be a first or second?
I mean, by every picture I saw, by every report I got, I mean,
from the callouts,
Julianne Kula was right up there. How she ended up in fourth place, and Kiyoshi told me that the place, you know, erupted in boos and jeer. You know, there was just not a pleasant announcement for the crowd.
Right. Well, she's a hot little number too. You know, Julie is just beautiful. Yeah, and that doesn't hurt either. But you know what? She was in great shape. I'm looking at the places. I look down to 14th place. I see Sherilyn Leroy, who was in the Olympia this last year and was like second and third in a couple shows. So I don't know. When you go out to these shows that are a little off the beaten path, you know, Sacramento's a little off the beaten path. You don't have your same judging panel that you do at most at the other shows. the placings change a lot. You know,
yeah, they do.
Judges, especially with figure, it's very subjective.
Yep.
Sometimes they play favorites in certain regions of the country. That's what happens when you do that. You know, next week is the Kentucky Pro Figure event down in Louisville, Kentucky there. And I know Julie's going to be competing down there. So the placings can change dramatically. Don't be surprised if you see Julie come out on top in
I hope so.
Down south there. So actually, I was going to ask Liberatore to cover that show for us, but I remembered he's coming up here for the Battle of the Biceps. Yeah. So
he won't be
down there. But anyway, Sacramento was a success. I think our coverage was great. I want to thank Ralph DeHaan and you and all the Kiyoshi and all the people who helped contribute to giving us some outstanding coverage. I mean, people are really realizing that RX Muscle is the place to go for contest coverage and contest results. And I just want to thank all the supporters out there. John, we have our first guest holding on the phone, so why don't we get right to him?
All right.
All right, our next guest is a good friend of mine, Brian Cunningham. He's the founder of Pure Life. He's got a degree in epidemiology from New York Medical College, and he's had over 20 years experience in the variety of fields related to environmental health, pharmaceutical, medical research, and nutrition and fitness. The main reason I have him here actually is because we have a mutual friend that John, I grew up who really basically taught me the ropes and was kind of my mentor, and I guess Brian's mentor at the same time, and I think we're going to have a lot of fun with him. So without further ado, let me get him on the line here. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dave. Good to be here.
What's happening?
Now, Brian, you've also been, some of the nutritional supplements you've developed have been on have been recommended by, I think, that Gary Trudeau guy, is that what his name is, from the...
Kevin Trudeau. More Natural Cures Revealed. And then also John Gray, the best-selling author of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, recommends one of my products for stress and anxiety to all his customers out there on his website.
Yeah, so we're going to talk a little about those later. But what I want to get to first is, you know, first of all, how we became friends, because a lot of people don't know who you are, you know, to the average listener out there, Brian Cunningham. They may not even tune into the show, but they don't know that we have a lot of history together. First of all, we went to the same medical school. You were in the Masters of Public Health degree.
That's right. Well, I met you there, and then I met you there and over in the gym at the same time. I met you before you got big.
That's right. You knew me when I was on the way up rather than the way down. And Brian still looks, by the way, exactly the same as he did 20 years ago, John.
Does he?
Yeah, he hasn't changed.
I hate people like that.
Still has a full head. Brian was one of these guys who was complaining about losing his hair 20 years ago, and he still has just as much
exactly
hair today.
Exactly the same, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. I had a friend like that, too. He's rubbing monoxide on his scalp 20 years ago, and he looks exactly the same today.
It's amazing. Not one hair did he lose. He might have grown a few extra hairs, actually.
Yeah, it's just because we lost them. It just looks different by comparison.
Actually, also, when I went to when I got my gyno done by Dr. Blau, like, I was the first bodybuilder he ever did, and back in those days, we didn't know that if you took, like, fish oil and vitamin E, you bled.
Right.
So I bled so much that I wound up in the hospital, and believe it or not, Brian's sister was my nurse.
No way.
Yeah, you forgot that, Brian, right?
I did forget that, Dave. You're right. That's right.
She's like, you're a bodybuilder, huh? I said, yeah. She's like, yeah, my brother Brian is a bodybuilder. I'm like, oh, yeah, what's his last name? She's like, Cunningham. And I said, holy shit.
Small world.
Very small world.
Wow.
Let's talk a little bit about our mentor, I guess you can call him. He's no longer alive, God rest his soul, Dr. Mike. What was your first meeting with him? How'd you meet Dr. Mike? And then I'm going to tell you my story about him.
Yeah, I probably met him the same way you did. I met him over at Bill's gym over there in Portchester. And, you know, I just hit it off instantaneously. I mean, he's a mad scientist, man. He's left-handed. I'm left-handed. Very eccentric, far-out thinker. So we were like soul brothers in a lot of ways. He was older than I was. I mean, older than you, I think, too. Probably like 15, 20 years older than us. But just way ahead of his time, I think, you know. And just a good guy. I mean, definitely had issues, as you know, Dave. I don't want to maybe go into that too much. Maybe you will. But just a really good-hearted guy. Meant well. And so it was easy to become friends with him.
Yeah, well, Dr. Mike, John, was, first of all, let me just give you a little background, was it like a child prodigy. He graduated high school like 16 and college at like 18, and like he was in medical school by like 21 or something like that.
He was number one in his graduating class at New York Medical, just so you know. He was the same school we went to, Dave.
Yeah, he graduated valedictorian. He had a photographic memory, and he was insanely brilliant, which is a brutal combination, you know, as you know. But sometimes that's not always the best thing before you. He he was, John, you know how hard it is to become a dermatologist. They don't give out dermatology residencies.
I did not know that.
Yeah, that was because everyone wants to be a dermatologist because they don't have any emergencies.
Yeah.
You pop a few zits and you give them a bill. Well, Dr. Mike was a dermatologist. He got like one of the only dermatology residencies right out of med school or right out of, because he was just so brilliant, the guy. And he had like a practice in Scarsdale, New York, which is like one of the richest places in Westchester.
Right.
And he was, he lived in a house, I guess, and the whole house was furnished with weightlifting equipment. I never saw it, Brian, but I heard that he used to tell me he had a side lateral machine by his telephone so that when he would talk on the phone, he can do extra shoulders, you know.
Well, you know, Dave, his house was featured in like one of those Better Homes and Garden magazines.
Oh, well, I didn't know that.
He told me that, yeah, because it was so amazing the way he had done it up inside, actually, that like Better Homes and Garden, some kind of Martha Stewart Living magazine back in those days, probably like the late 70s, early 80s, had actually featured his house in their magazine.
Wow.
So,
now, Dr. Mike also, you know, was very fond of the ladies, evidently. And
well, that's good.
He was, I think, from what he told me, he was sleeping with all his patients. And he I guess it got around that he had slept with so many of his patients that they were all talking about him in the beauty parlor. And his wife was there at the time, and she found out. And after she divorced him, it was all downhill from him. Because, like, he really was a prodigy. He really just couldn't handle day-to-day living. He just, all he knew was bodybuilding and medicine, you know. So he fell apart, basically, and he just regressed to this, like, you know, 18-year-old bodybuilder guy, you know, who just worked at various clinics around the country. But
Macking on nurses.
Oh, he loved the nurses. Do you remember, Brian, when what his theory was about when he wanted to have a mulatto child because he thought mulatto girls were beautiful. So he had this.
Oh, yeah.
He was married to Carol. He had this black.
That's right. He actually had a child. With her, yes. Think, right? Yeah, yeah, little girl. She was adorable.
And do you remember what he told us about the breast milk?
No, oh my God, David. Yeah, I remember that vaguely. Yeah, you're bringing back some long memories, dude.
Dr. Mike was the first guy to talk about colostrum. Remember when they were selling colostrum back in the 90s, John?
Yeah, yes.
Well, I think it was because of him. He would write these brilliant, come up with these brilliant things and like just pass the information on to like a supplement company and then just let them do whatever they wanted with it. He never made any money off this stuff, but he was the first person to recommend colostrum as a supplement. Obviously, you really couldn't collect, you know, human colostrum back then, you know, because there's not enough of it. But so they started selling cow colostrum, if you remember.
Right, of course.
But Dr. Mike basically, he believed that you had to use the human colostrum. So when his wife Carol gave birth, he would breastfeed off of her for the extra colostrum to grow. I'm not making this up, Brian. Tell him.
Did it work?
No, I mean, listen, the craziest thing I saw was, he had carpal tunnel syndrome and he got operated on. And, you know, of course, the doctor tells him, look, don't go back into the gym until this time. And you know, Doc, God rest his soul, couldn't stay out of the gym. So he was back in there like right away and he tore open his wrists. And, you know, Dave, you and I used to go there late because I was working full-time and going to grad school, and you were probably going to medical school.
Right.
And so we would go in there like around 11, 12 o'clock at night to work out, and Doc would be in there. And one night, he and I were on top of the table there, suturing up, actually operating on his open wrist. It was like a scene out of the Terminator where you see the tendons from the finger moving. And here's the thing, and you know this, Dave. He actually got one of those GrowPep catalogs and was ordering IGF and NGF before they were even commercially available. He had some pseudo account with Allied Biocellular Technologies, some, you know, a company based on research that he would be able to get these peptides. This is, I think, long before they became popular in the bodybuilding community.
Yeah, and I think I was one of his accomplices in that.
Yeah. But I mean, when I saw that, I was like, this is so out there. He sutured it up, went back to do shrugs, and like, I'm talking about hardcore, man. It's out of control hardcore.
He would train all night. John, you remember how Michael Zampano used to hold Sunday school at Gold's in Venice?
Sure.
This guy would hold, like, it wasn't announced that it was Sunday school, but we would go there at like sometimes 1, 2, 3 in the morning because, you know, and I'd be up all night. Just he would be training and I would just be sitting there asking him questions, you know.
Wow.
And we would throw ideas around about insulin. I was one of the first people to use insulin back in the day because him and I postulated how to use it properly. And, you know, he just was like a real smart guy. He can like spin molecules in his head. You know, he just was, when you have a photographic memory, you just have these abilities. But on top of the wrist thing, yeah, he had his self-destruct streak. If he was too sore to train a body part, he would just lie to cane it up. And he would train it anyway.
That's right. His knees, his legs, or something. He
used to
lie to cane his legs, man.
Yeah, he used to
always. What was that thing you were telling me earlier about him making you pull a pin out of his wrist?
Well, I'm going to get to that. So when Brian actually has the first part of the story, because what happened was he wanted to do heavy. He used to love to do like 200-pound dumbbell shrugs. So his wrist was hurting him so much that he went home and he lied to cane. He would go home, lie to cane, and come back to the gym. And then he would do them, and he snapped his wrist. So what happened was he had to get it fused. And that's when he was very unhappy with the actual orientation that they fused it in, because he couldn't supinate his wrist all the way and do barbell curls. So I remember he had a problem, and that's when Brian was suturing his wrist up. But he actually decided to go back about 6 months later and have it rebroken and reset. I mean, which was a really intense operation.
Sure.
So what happened was he finally got it in the orientation he wanted it in, and he said to me, "All right." He had a pin in there. They had pinned it with like a metal rod.
Sure.
And he said, "I got to get this thing out of my wrist. It's driving me crazy. Every time I bend my wrist, it's digging in. I can't do, you know, I can't, you know, turn my thing up, my finger up at the last minute." Everything was like revolved around bodybuilding with him. So he convinced me to cut open the skin and pull the pin out. So he lidocained it up, and I basically grabbed the pin with this kind of like, I guess it would be like a forceps or what would be like some
a clamp
or something like that.
Yeah.
And I started pulling, but it was really in there, really good. So he's like, "All right, I'm going to pull the opposite direction. Well, you pull the, you know, and the other." It was like we were having a tug of war. And when the pin finally let go, I was 320 pounds. I went flying back and went through his wall of his house, which, as Brian can attest to, was an absolute pigsty. Anyway, no one even noticed that I went through the wall. He put a poster over it, I think. And I mean, this is how intense this guy was.
Wow.
I mean,
but he got ugly after that, though, right? I mean, you know, yeah. With the long-term growth hormone, his elbows were getting ridiculous. He had that liver tumor that was just like out of control.
Yeah, yeah,
man.
Killed himself. Yeah, he killed himself.
I mean, probably a 20-pound liver tumor, man. Remember that? It was
He thought like if I told him I was doing like, you know, 1,000 milligrams of testosterone a week, he figured because I was so big that I must have been doing 10 times that, so he would take 20 times that. You know, that was his mentality. You know, in life, God. And it was unfortunate because he really destroyed himself and ultimately killed himself. Brian, I mean, he passed away recently, I heard.
Yeah, he did, from kidney failure, I believe. I forgot what I told you there a few months back, but yeah, he died.
He actually when he had that liver tumor. I remember one of our friends, Frank, who was visiting him in the hospital, told me that he was like, "Frank, you got to." He used to have this raspy voice. "Frank, you got to sneak some growth hormone into the hospital for me. I got to recover. I got to regenerate my liver." You know, I mean, that everything was a drug. He had every drug, any condition he had, he can solve. You know,
wow.
But you know, he was good because if you got sick, he always can die. He was the ultimate diagnostician. He can figure anything out. He always knew what was wrong with you, which is nice to have someone like that around, because I never had someone I can ask questions to and actually get a real answer. You know,
wow.
In that sense, you know, he was our guru. You know, so.
Yeah, he definitely opened the doors in a lot of ways. That's for sure.
Now, Brian, what kind of an influence would you say Dr. Mike had on your life? I mean, obviously, we know what I did. I wound up going to jail and writing steroid articles in magazines. But how did you use what the knowledge you got from Dr. Mike in your life?
I think in the beginning, I was maybe not as serious as you were about bodybuilding, but I was more just for, you know, to look good, of course, and try to hook up with women. But I think as I got older, once I hit like in my mid-30s, I began to just kind of embrace, I guess, a deeper reflection behind bodybuilding, about really being healthy, I guess. And then, you know, definitely Doc, to some degree, was symbolic to me of how dysfunctional people can get in their obsessions, man. You know, I mean, you know, like the movie The Wrestler, or like, you know, Bigger, Faster, Stronger. It's the same thing there. There's a lot of unhappy characters out there doing things, like they're stuck in these vicious patterns of self-destructive behavior, and they don't know how to get out of it, man. They're really unhappy. And so I began, Doc really, to me, was the poster boy for someone who I really loved and cared for tremendously. But also realize that if I wasn't careful, Dave, you know, I was on spin cycle and down a negative spiral as well. I mean, you know, Frank Wilhelm, you just mentioned him.
Yeah, he went.
What happened to him?
Yeah, he became a heroin addict for a while. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, you know, it really got me off on a, I guess, a more, you know, I mean, as you know, I've been pretty much this way a long time now. I still like to work out. I'm an avid snowboarder and scuba diver and everything, but I'm definitely into the more holistic health, I guess. We're really balancing out that psychological aspect of why I'm doing things. You know, like, you know, I had a lot of injuries from racing motorcycles when I was younger, and now I got, like, arthritis in my knee, for example. Dave, your shoulder was messed up for a long time because, you know, you were pushing too hard, and your shoulder would give out, as an example. So, you know, when you're young, you look back, and when you're young, you do stupid shit. You look back, like, what the hell was I thinking, man? What was I doing?
You know? It is when Dr. Mike, back in the running craze, John, in the 70s, he was a big believer in, you know, he wanted to be a runner, but he was like, he was a bodybuilder. He was like, he was the first guy over 200 pounds to, like, well, this is what he told us, at least at the time.
Yeah.
He was the only guy over 200 pounds to finish the marathon or something like that.
That's right.
Under a certain time. Yeah, New York, when they used to run around the Central Park, you remember?
Yeah.
They would do laps around the reservoir there. And, I mean, he eventually tore both quads, because what he would do is he would inject, you know, cortisone into his knees before he'd run so that he wouldn't be in pain, and he tore both quads. So when he walked, he had this like little bit of like he walked very unusual, very funny. Like he had a little wobble to his walk. And you know, every time I start getting injuries and looking at myself in the mirror, I start thinking, am I becoming like Doc? You know, because he had bad shoulders too. He couldn't do presses. He only could do side laterals. And I find myself sometimes using some of his techniques that he was using to train around his injuries. And I say, and I'm always pulling myself back. And Brian's right. I think the sport really nurtures this whole like more is better, and can I keep going to the extreme? And I think at some point you have to say to yourself, wait a second, you know, there's got to be a health aspect to this, Brian, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. You know, Dave, I'm actually writing an article now called The Penis, Peas, and Peacocks. Now, Dave, you're a smart guy. You obviously know that penis is symbolic of sex, and peas, of course, anyone who's taken biology knows that Gregory Mendel discovered genes by working on peas in his backyard, basically.
Right.
But, you know, the metaphor here is that the penis is sex. So sex is how genes get us to do stupid shit. And you won't see a better example in nature than a peacock of some species that is off on this tangent. Dave, a peacock's plume serves no function at all in nature other than to look attractive to females. Right. That's all it does. It actually makes the peacock more vulnerable to predation by foxes.
Sure.
So my point here is that evolution is a stupid game, and we're all pawns in this game, man. I mean, our behaviors, the things we do, you know, there's so much dysfunction. We don't realize it because we've been programmed by millions of years of evolution to play its game, and it's not to our advantage. You know, there's this joke out there. What is it? What's the useless piece of flesh attached to a penis? You guys probably heard it before.
The man,
the human.
What's the useless? A man, exactly. It is seriously, exactly. You know, I mean, it really goes.
Sean wrote that joke.
Yeah. I'm sure it's probably the vagina joke, but I don't want to go there for the female listeners out there. You know,
we don't have any. Don't worry about it.
Okay. So then it should be, what's the useless piece of flesh attached to a vagina? Is a woman, exactly. You know. Is that in the game of things, man, we are all disposable, Dave. We're all pawns, and evolution has us programmed by genetic selection, basically, over the years, to do things that are counterproductive to us, man, you know? And that's the point, is that if you don't realize that, you know, get this, women swallow 7 pounds of lipstick over the course of their lifetime. 7 pounds
wow.
of lipstick. And as you know, it's often full of lead, so they're getting lead poisoning, and that's why they're so stupid, I guess, too.
I gotta tell Clark.
I don't go there. That was just a joke. But the point is, though, is there's a shit we do to look good and to maximize sexual attractiveness, Dave, as you know, is counterintuitive to maximizing health and longevity and balance, that's all. And so when you realize that, you know, especially as you get older, I think, Dave, you and I both are in our 40s now, you start realizing, I'm in this for the long haul, and I gotta start, you know, maybe cutting back on what I'm doing to, you know, to maximize how I look or how I feel or how hard I want to work. I mean, look at guys. They're workaholics, they're alcoholics, they're juiceaholics. We do so much crazy, risky shit. Why? I mean, just, you know, like one of my clients was saying, Brian, I spend my whole life trying to fuck. He goes, I got 10 seconds of fucking, and now I'm fucked for 18 years. I got a mortgage, I got monogamy, and I got kids. He goes, I'm fucked, you know? In a sense, that's the joke, that life plays on you in a sense, you know? And my point is that if you don't realize this, man, you're trapped in this spin cycle, and it just gets worse and worse until you become like a doc, in a sense.
Well, you know, Harrison Pope sort of touched on that with the Adonis complex, you know, and he created, you know, the idea of reverse anorexia, and just showed that the absolute complete body dysmorphic disorder that became so encompassing and life encompassing that people would literally, you know, forego all aspects of their life just to train in the gym and look good.
good and actually even lose sight of the track, lose sight of the fact of why they were doing it. If they were doing it to attract chicks or, you know, to excel in another area, they became consumed with the workout ideal and didn't do anything else. And they became completely useless in society. But you know, you look back and you know he made the point. My grandfather never worried about if I had a six pack of abs. And we call it evolution, but it seems like we've gone backwards in a sense, don't you say?
Well, you know, evolution works over millennia, so there may be transient fluctuations or cultural fluctuations, as an example. Yeah, that's a good point, sure. But, you know, over this, the span of things, you know, culture is dictated by biology. So, you know, again, it's our genes that are always going to be churning out these neurotransmitter ratios, this chemical cocktail that collectively as a society, you know, will go like up and down. So there may be variations, you're right, John, to some degree. But I think that overall, as you know, like, say, sexually, for men, wide shoulders, you know, an hour hips as an example, those are like, you know, certain proportions that are always going to be timeless and women are going to find them attractive. Now, you get someone like Dave or, so, you know, bodybuilders, you know, there's a thing in nature called the supermodel effect, actually. This is true. They actually had to ban this beer in Australia because it was the same colors as this endangered beetle. And the beetles, the male beetles, were going for this beer can on the side of the road and trying to hump it because they thought it was a humongous female. And they found this with a lot of species. When you put a big-sized female visually in front of them, they will choose like the cardboard cutout over the real female. Wow. And that's again how, like, you know, oftentimes we're programmed to do things that are counterintuitive to our benefit, you know.
Well, you know, there was a study done recently that showed it was what women found attractive in men, sort of instinctually attractive, and they related it back to, you know, to the apes and in the animal kingdom, where it was the big chest. If a woman saw that the guy had the big chest, she instinctually went for the guy with the big chest, much like, you know, the ape would, because the big chest indicated to the female that this guy would be a good hunter, a good protector, a good provider, and be, you know, create a safety net of sorts for the mother and the young. So, you know, as it relates to today, it's pretty much useless because, you know, the guy with the big chest is not a great provider. It's not a good hunter. it's not a good protector.
He's a bouncer.
He's a bouncer at Neptune's, right.
Like I said, it's often counterintuitive, exactly.
Right.
Well, you know what? There's got to be some kind of a socialization issue to this whole thing, Brian, because if you look back at Dr. Mike as our model we're using here, essentially, you know, he grew up too fast in a sense. You know, he was a child prodigy, John, that they studied when he was like 4 years old. That's how smart this guy was. And, you know, you just don't get socialized with your normal group of your peers when you graduate high school at 16 and college at like 19, you know. It doesn't happen. And I think what happened was later in life, he went the opposite direction. He tried to live his childhood when he was an adult. And sometimes that doesn't work right, you know. I like to believe that, you know, I got involved with bodybuilding. We're all a little narcissistic and I love the sport. But at some point I said to myself, okay, this is a means to an end. It's not the end. Don't you think, Brian, some people lose track and they think it is the end? You know, that's it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, Dave, I don't want to use the movie Bigger, Faster, Stronger because that's the real characters there. But, like, the wrestler, I think, is a really good example, too. Of, like, you know, you got all these guys, these MMA fighters and these wrestlers, and that guy couldn't let go, man. They told him, look, if you fight, you're going to die. And he's like, fuck it. You know, I'll die then. And that's what happened in the end, basically. He takes that last leap. You know, so he was a regular Joe. He wasn't even, like, a prodigy like the way Doc was. So, you know, again, I think a lot of us, and again, you know, everyone out there listening to us right now, we're not just athletes. Everyone's got a job, you know, and as you know, a lot of guys, man, they work themselves to death, you know, for the 2.2 kids and the mortgage. And I'm not saying it's bad, but, you know, Dave, I'm sure you've seen enough people around you that work themselves literally to death, actually, as well. So it isn't just bodybuilding that's unhealthy. I think all of us got to take a step back and look at society in a sense, because to some degree, we're getting messages from society. I mean, look, you know, and they're often unhealthy, you know, like, I mean, crazy stuff, man, I think, in a sense. Society is not really out to, I mean, dude, how about in medicine? I mean, for example, you know, again, I'm not bashing medicine, but there are a lot of controversial cures, like, say, chemotherapy for cancer, you know, the efficacy of which really is very dubious, you know, but you know what? It keeps the wheels of the economy going, though, in a sense. And so often, again, it's about growing the economy and not the individual and the benefit of the individual, for example.
I got to stop before John asks the next question. I got to say this because this was a really bold statement Brian once said to me, and I don't know if you remember telling me this. You once said, "You know what? I want to get cancer. I welcome it. I know I can cure it without having to do any of these crazy chemotherapy." And I thought that was an insane statement. You know, you want to clarify that?
Yeah. Well, the thing is that I guess, you know, Dave, when I was in grad school, I did a lot of research at New York Medical on on the politics of medicine and especially on HIV and virology, and then I worked at a drug company in virology too, but also on cancer. And you know, I began to see that a lot of good clinicians all over the world that had very high success rates with a variety of therapies. For example, the simplest molecule, Dave, oxygen, it keeps you alive. This is the paradox, right? And yet we're dying by oxidation. So, you know, doctors in Germany and Europe, for example, are using ozone therapy very successfully, actually, for cancer. And so I began to realize there were a lot of very effective therapies all over the world that if you could tap into, you'd really have a very high chance of beating cancer. And honestly, Dave, over the past 10 years, the statistics that I've been seeing have been pretty convincing that that still holds true.
Well, I've long made the assertion that there is a long-running conspiracy within the government and the medical community to keep America sick. Because the longer, the fatter America gets, the fatter and sicker they get, the more money Big Pharma and the Medical Association makes. And they're, of course, in cahoots with the refiners and the growers, the people who are making high fructose corn syrup and carcinogenic additives to the food supply. And, you know, these guys are applying their poison and their cure for the poison on the unsuspecting dingbats that live between LA and LA and New York, that comprise most of the country, and they've got 60% of the nation literally eating out of their hand, getting sick, getting fat, getting sick, so that Big Pharma and the AMA can cure them.
Yeah, you know, John, for a long time I felt the same way, but I have a girlfriend who's a doctor of toxicology at a drug company, and the story she tells me about the FDA and how much hassle they give the drug companies and how much it costs them and how, like, just discombobulated the whole system is, I began to realize that while there may be individual cases of this, I'm not saying people don't conspire to do evil things, they do all the time, but I think in general, John, you got to realize we're a bunch of clueless monkeys. I mean, as a species, we can't know. Seriously, we came out of the mud yesterday, buddy. We came out of the mud, and we have this big system of 6 billion people and growing every day, 18,000 people an hour added to the planet. It's a clusterfuck, and so you're bound to get all kinds of shit happening that may give us the impression of being a conspiracy, but you know what? There's nobody smart enough to do that kind of shit. There really isn't. Everyone is as clueless as you and I and Dave are. I'm telling you, man, they really are.
We're all just a bunch of shaved apes,
but Brian,
right?
Brian, you used to be a conspiracy theory guy. I remember back.
I did, Dave. You know what? I really did. You're right. I'm still kind of big on conspiracies.
Are
definitely.
You switching? Are you switching your
thing? I'm really thinking that we're just another, as George Carlin would say, you know, a speck on God's ass. He's going to sneeze and we're going to blow off into the winds of extinction, basically, you know? Yeah, I do. I think that we are just out of the mud yesterday. We're doing the best we can, and we're like a bunch of chimps with our fingers on atomic bombs, and it's not a good recipe for the future. You know,
just watch Congress operate, and you get a great example of that.
Yeah,
what do you think about the new health care bill that was just passed?
You know, Dave, I think that expecting the government to do anything meaningful for you as an individual is kind of like expecting, chemotherapy to cure cancer. It's just not going to happen.
Well, that health bill that they just, Nancy Pelosi's little darling there, is never going to see the light of day.
They passed it.
Yeah.
But it's got to pass the House. It's never going to pass.
You don't think so?
No way.
First of all,
no one's read it.
Right.
So I don't know how the hell they passed it because nobody read it. Nancy Pelosi wouldn't let America read it. It wouldn't. No one knows what that fucking thing says.
Yeah, yeah.
It's 2,000 pages. They give them an hour and a half to look at it, and then they vote on it.
That's the American way.
We're totally fucked. I don't know. So apart from the emotional and psychological aspects of all of this, you know, dysfunction. What can people do to balance out the negative aspects of the lifestyle?
Yeah, great question. You know, I think, for example, you gotta get back to the basics. You know, I mean, you know, if women want to wear high heel shoes and wear lipstick, that's fine. But you know, learn about the chemicals that are in this stuff, and in the cosmetics, for example. There's definitely a lot of books out there, you know, don't go to the cosmetics counter without me, for example, where they tell you which companies have the highest amount of lead and arsenic and all that kind of stuff. And so get toxic-free lipstick, you know, do that.
Is it really, hold on, let me just stop you. I know you're on a rant right now, but I got to stop you. Is lipstick really that detrimental? I fucking hate it, and I always tell Colette to stop wearing it all the time, but is it really that bad for you?
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you go to, what's it called, the Environmental Working Group's website, I think, you Google them, they did a study, Dave. They actually tested most of the major brands, and they found, like, over 70% of them had significant, like, I'm talking, like, exceeding OSHA safety guidelines of lead contamination, basically. They were very high in lead, you know. And again, when you get to the fact that women are swallowing this stuff, you know, again, it's microscopic amounts every day, for example, but over the course of a lifetime, you know, I'll Google the study and pull it off for you if you want. There's average between 6 to 9 pounds of lead, man, of lipstick in their bodies. Now, of course, you know, if you have a healthy diet, like vitamin C is a great chelator of lead. And so, you know, without a doubt, if you're taking vitamin C, for example, or N-acetylcysteine, you know, these compounds can help to pull it out, but why not remove the exposure? That's the most prudent thing to do.
Because that's the most logical thing to do, and try to get a woman to stop wearing lipstick.
Well, I think they don't even know, is what Brian's saying. They don't. We're being duped by these companies.
I don't think they would care.
They'd care, believe me. If there was brands that didn't have it, wouldn't you use that?
Oh, yeah, if there was brands that didn't have it, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure there are. I mean, you know, you go to like some of these cruelty-free companies and stuff now. I'm sure they're definitely doing things without as much of these toxins in there, you know. But definitely, you know, Dave, as you know now, we're seeing more and more that inflammation is a key factor in everything. I mean, it mediates the anabolic process to some degree. You know, too much of it is not good in any way, shape, or form. And so I think that, you know, you want to make sure that you're controlling inflammation. You know, as a woman, if you're going to get breast implants, for example, a lot of women get scar tissue forming from that. You know, they get maybe you know, subclinical immune reactions to that as well. So you really want to make sure that you optimize immune function, and one way is to really control inflammation. And you know, that would be, of course, trying to have a diet that is high in you know, in alkalizing foods, for example. You know, having a lot more omega-3 fatty acids, for example, too. You know, Dave, one thing I've been doing a lot that you guys as bodybuilders appreciate is smoothies. But get this, I'm putting like kale, ginger, basil, you name it, you can put it in a smoothie. I mean, I can make like a vegetable smoothie that it tastes off the hook, and I'm putting in like, I'm talking like a major chunk of ginger in there.
Wow.
So, you know, again, ginger is one of those miracle foods from God, I'm telling you. This stuff is like, if you Google the studies behind ginger as far as like maximizing testicular health and function, for example.
Really?
It's amazing. I'm telling you, Dave, there are compounds in there that can basically, you know, affect so many different, you know, endocrine functions in our body. And I live on ginger. Definitely.
You know, we know a young guy who can't even get it up, and he's only 18, so imagine what, maybe he needs some ginger in his diet.
Yeah, I'm not sure, I'll have to look it up again, but I think that one of the studies even referred to it as having similar effects as Clomid, actually, as far as like upregulating fertility and signaling to the testes. Yeah, wow. It's pretty impressive, buddy, it really is. Curcumin's another one. I mean, curcumin, you know, these drug companies, they're racing to patent the, you know, the specifics of what's in curcumin that actually does its anti-cancer stuff, as an example. You know, it's been shown to grow hair. Get this, raspberry ketones, capsicum, red peppers, and curcumin applied topically grows more hair than anything else they've found so far. Apparently, it's a very successful topical hair grower, for example.
Have you used it, Brian?
No, I don't have to, Dave. You're right. I took so much of it.
Yeah, but
I gotta worry.
15 years ago, you would have used it anyway, though. You know,
I know.
I'm gonna try it. But doesn't the red pepper stuff make you like kind of flush you also?
It does, but get this though. Apparently, it stimulates local IGF. That's the mechanism of action, actually.
Wow, really?
Is that when you irritate the skin, somehow, you know, I don't know, I haven't read the whole thing yet, I just kind of cruised through the abstract, but you actually get local IGF, and that apparently is what helps those hair follicles to kick back into growing again.
Maybe I should just rub some IGF on my head.
Yeah, I know, right?
Remember what Doc did? Hold on, I gotta go back to a Dr. Mike story. John, Dr. Mike had this theory that the reason why we lose hair as a man, is the, what is it called? The calvicula on your head?
The
galea on your head, which is like the area where you normally would see a bald spot.
Right.
It, as you get older, it thickens. It becomes more fibrotic.
John, just so you know, it's like a sheath of fascia underneath the scalp skin, yeah.
Right.
Right, right.
In men, for some reason, I guess DHT thickens it. And he was convinced that it was starving the blood supply to the hair follicles. So, you know, one day I said to him as a joke, I said, well, why don't you just get yours removed? I said, because he was dealing with hair loss at the time. I didn't have any problems at the time. I was young. I was in my 20s. He's like, I know. That's my theory. I got to find someone who can do it. So he searched. He found some guy in California, I think it was, who agreed to remove his galea. And I'm serious. I'm not making this up. Thank God Brian's here. He had the thing removed.
He
looked like a Shar-Pei the rest of his life. And unfortunately, he didn't grow any more hair.
Yeah, he didn't. That's right. You're missing him running. I mean, do you remember his feet, his toes?
Yeah, he had a tear.
They were so splayed out, man. He had to wear like these humongous sneakers because his toes were all smushed, I guess, from running so hard.
I don't know. I think probably from injecting with lidocaine. He had a thumb of his toe, John, that went at a right angle to his foot. And so he couldn't wear shoes. So what he'd do is he'd have to wear these sneakers and make a hole in the side almost.
Stick his toe out?
It was. Remember the movie Goonies? That's what he looked like. His foot looked like. It was absolutely disgusting.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. It's crazy. You know?
And he made up some cockamamie story about why it happened, too. I don't know what his story was.
Well, you know, back to these smoothies, though, you know, listen, I mean, I eat all my eggs raw. You know, I get my milk now. I'm not sure how it is in New York for you, Dave, but in Connecticut, you can get raw milk, unpasteurized, unhomogenized. Again, it's enzyme-rich. It's really healthy. You know, I eat my meat.
Can you break it down? Can you break this? Someone was telling me even if you're lactose intolerant, you can drink unpasteurized milk or whatever it is.
You know, Dr. McCullough for a long time was against milk. He's one of the big web gurus out there on health and wellness, and he says that he believes raw milk is much easier to digest for everybody, actually. He actually recommends milk now if you get it raw, which is unpasteurized and unhomogenized. And I remember a long time ago, back when I knew you, Dave, I was looking at, you know, the pasteurization process heats milk up really pretty hot, and so, again, you denature all those bioactive enzymes, and then when you homogenize it, you basically cram it through this filter at really high pressures, and you end up making the fat in milk act like bad cholesterol. I remember reading a book about that, actually, and so that really got me off of milk.
Yeah, I don't drink milk.
Yeah, if you can avoid it, you're better off, you know.
What about goat's milk?
You know, I think, you know, as far as allergenic possibilities, goat and sheep are better, actually, John. I do think they are better. But, you know, they're hard to get, though. And again, to me, it's the pasteurization process. Once you heat something up, you know, most nutrients, as you know, Dave, are sensitive to oxygen, heat, and time. You know, the longer they're exposed to something like, say, sunlight, for example, the more they're going to degrade. So whenever you heat something up like milk, you're definitely going to degrade the enzymes. And, you know, that's a key thing. I think even with meat, I mean, I'm eating my grass-fed beef now, Dave, and I'm just like pan-searing the outside, and the inside is as raw as can be, and it's awesome, you know, and you get all those enzymes.
I don't know. Did you see when I went up and filmed Ben White up at the grass-fed buffalo ranch up in Albany?
I didn't see that one.
Oh, yeah. They have this grass-fed buffalo ranch where they just wander around and they eat grass, and they're really healthy. I mean, they sell it. You can order the meat right from them. They'll even deliver it, but, I mean, you could probably even take a ride up there from where you live.
Where is it?
It's in Albany.
Oh, that's not that far. It's about an hour and a half from here.
Yeah, I mean, but they do deliver it, too. They, you know, but ground buffalo, the stuff has more omega-3 fats than salmon does, I mean.
Yeah, well, I mean, grass-fed beef, whether it's cattle or buffalo, is higher in as you said, omega-3, but also CLA. And, you know, there's a lot of evidence out there about CLA being anti-cancer and helping your body to burn fat, too, apparently, you know. So, you know, a lot of guys are saying, well, it costs more money. But, you know, the thing is, you're investing in yourself, you know. And, you know, Dave, I was sending you an article recently on the fact that protein can be a contributing factor to aging because it causes mitochondrial damage. You know, you may want to start looking at, you know, the controversy about having too much protein. I think if you have a better source of protein that is more bioavailable, you probably can get by with less protein and still get the same amount of anabolic processes in the body happening. You know, I mean, again, this is controversial. Dave, you're probably an expert on this more than I am.
Scott Connolly already commented on that. He said it was horse shit. He said the study was flawed, and he pointed out a whole bunch of things about what was wrong with that study.
He did. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It was not a good study.
But as far as the CLA and the omega fats in the free range meats, Dr. Connolly brought to mind
the notes of Lewis and Clark when they made their expedition. I think it was Clark, one of them, Lewis or Clark, was a scientist, and he kept very detailed notes of their, you know, trek across the wilderness. And at one point, they went for weeks and weeks and weeks eating only the game that they shot. And, you know, no carbohydrates, no other food source whatsoever other than the game. And he noticed that after this specified period of time, how healthy they were. They were robust and healthy, and they felt, and Connolly surmises that it's because the game, because it was free ranged, it was loaded with, you know, good fats, you know, CLA and all the others, all the other, you know, unspoiled nutrients that we get because we, you know, farm these animals in captivity. What would you think of that?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. You know, one thing I would caution against, though, again, is that, you know, omega-3 fats are very unstable. They're highly unstable, and so you really don't want to cook them too much. You know, I think as much as possible, if you can eat, you know, your meats raw or maybe pan-seared on the outside or whatever, and they're clean, you don't got to worry. I mean, you know, I get my salmon from Trader Joe's, that wild salmon, and I put it in the oven at about 180 degrees, and, you know, again, the inside's typically raw, and it's fine. I've never gotten sick from it. You know, I eat all my eggs raw too, so I definitely think that you want to be careful with temperature. You know, Life Extension had this article out there about advanced glycation end products that actually, when you denature proteins in food by cooking them too much, you actually contribute to advanced glycation end products happening in the body too. And as you guys know, that's how proteins cross-link and contribute to aging, basically. Sure. You know, tissues lose function, your heart, your skin, you get wrinkles, all this stuff. So, you know, I'm not sure to what degree that is a contributory factor, but you know what, John, if I can get around that easily and comfortably, why not?
Yeah, you know? I agree. I read in a study actually that showed that the charring of the meat on the outside, when you actually, you know, make that black charred crust on there, that is highly carcinogenic.
Yes, I've heard that many times, actually. That's right. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what compounds are formed, but I definitely heard that, read the same thing. Yeah, so again, I'll go back to eating as low temperature as you can.
Well, what we got to do is we got to get a chef in here who can do everything raw, because I like raw. I'm just lazy as far as preparing it goes. If I had someone who was shopping for me and preparing all these meals raw, I'd be fucking set, man.
There's a restaurant in the city called Raw.
Yeah, we'd go broke if we had to eat there every meal, though.
Brutal. Well, what are the gold mine this guy has? He's got no stove. He's got everything's raw. He can, every single thing on the menu is raw.
Isn't it mostly vegetarian though? There, I think.
No, he has sashimi and tartare and you know, beef sashimi. All every single thing in that restaurant is served raw. I do not know how he's getting around the health code with that.
No, he's just being careful. That's
but all. It's everything is raw in the entire place.
Dave, just a quick question, buddy. Yeah. I mean, isn't that what Colette's for?
but she likes to cook things crispy, and when women have eating disorders, you know, they're always making. She's got to always be cooking something with different spices. I'm a real easy guy. I can, like you said, I can take a couple eggs raw and fucking down them down my throat, and I'm good to go.
Yeah.
You know,
we had a guy on the show. I don't know if you listened. His name was Fingerman. He wasn't a bodybuilder, but he was into all this raw stuff too. And he made some raw cottage cheese and some eggs and some honey, and he made Kevin Lavrone drink it, drink it. And there are people that have some good recipes probably for the stuff, and it's just a matter of preparing it. You know what I mean? There is some preparation, and all the food obviously has to be fresh too.
Yeah. I mean, if there's one thing I can give your listeners out there that's really simple, I mean, the raw smoothies are off the hook. You know, again, you're getting all these nutrients in there. You start with your protein, your water, whatever juice, whatever you want to put in there, some blueberries. But, you know, if you put a little bit of a banana or a little bit of an apple, it will mask the taste of everything. And a little bit of sugar, too, of course, and found in those fruits. I mean, you can put, again, the biggest surprise to me was basil. I mean, who thought you could put basil in a smoothie and it tastes good? It tastes off the hook good. And the ginger, too. I mean, the ginger is phenomenal in a smoothie. I'm putting kale, any kind of sprouts. I mean, broccoli sprouts, you know, kale sprouts, alfalfa. You know, again, these sprouts, it's like wheatgrass or enzyme rich, and you want a lot of enzymes, man. Enzymes are these really sensitive bioactive proteins that do a lot of things in our bodies. We don't even know what the hell they do, you know? And so, again, why not get them? You know, science, again, as you know, David, is always kind of behind the curve. It's the best we got. It's the best tool mankind invented, but it's still behind the curve. And my thing is, you know, all these unnamed flavonoids and tannins and phenolic compounds, I don't know what they do, I don't know what they are, but I'm sure that they're in there for some reason. I'd rather have them in my body. You know?
Right, right. Well, let's talk a little bit about stress and anxiety, because this nation is like completely stressed out. And I see these bodybuilders that they're so anxious all the time. And I always tell people, I've never seen a barrel full of anxiety. So obviously it's got to be made up. But how do people deal with this? I know you have a really good product that you put out. I actually sell it on DavePalumbo.com on my website. It's called Euphoria. U4EA. So Euphoria. Tell us what's that's about and how you came about producing that thing.
Yeah, well, you know, you guys know, the Prozac Nation. I mean, there are more antidepressant prescriptions written in this country than I think the whole world combined or something. You know, we're in an economic depression, they're saying. Well, duh. I mean, the whole country's depressed, if you think about it. You know, it's like, seriously, there is a malaise of what I call subclinical, emotional disorders. People are stressed and unhappy, and, you know, we see our neighbors the same way, and so we kind of assume it's normal, you know? And again, Dave, the thing is, what motivates that wrestler in that movie, Mickey Rourke, to do that shit? To some degree, the guy's unhappy, man. He's stressed out. He's miserable. You know, he's not really dealing with that underlying factor right there. And so it causes him to repeat the same shit over and over again.
Right.
And so my thing is, you know, look, my product isn't the be-all end-all, but if you want to take something that beats, say, you know, an alcoholic drink or a hit of some kind of illegal drug as an example, or maybe some junk food, take this. It'll spin you off in a positive way, you know, because it's healthy for you, actually. And then you can get up and do something better, like, you know, go for a 5-mile run or go to the gym as an example or whatever. So I definitely think that, you know, stress and anxiety, long term, as you know, Dave, are very detrimental. I mean, those subclinical elevations of cortisol and all those different hormones that get elevated up there, they do wreak havoc on the body, man, without a doubt.
Well, what kind of, I know you have a lot of neurotransmitters in there that are what's gearing the product to making you feel good. But when you take the product, you do feel good. I almost equate it, John, as to like, and it's a much more toned down version of the old, remember when you used to take GHB when it was legal?
Mm-hmm.
Or illegal? But you kind of get a little buzz like
either
that.
Way.
It really relaxes you a lot. I mean, what are you mixing in there? I mean, obviously you can't tell us the proportions, but what are you mixing in there to make us feel that way?
Yeah, it's pretty simple. I mean, GABA is an amino acid available in any vitamin store, GNC, all across the country. The problem with GABA, of course, is that it doesn't cross the blood-brain barrier. So we have a special form of GABA in there, phenyl-GABA, that actually gets into the blood-brain barrier, into the brain, basically, and helps to elevate GABA, you know. But then again, you combine that with theanine, which also works on, changing the alpha waves into different, I think it's called beta waves or whatever, and it also helps with dopamine and serotonin. We put a little bit of kana in there as well, which is this rare herb from South Africa. Our new formula, Dave, coming out with, is going to have kana, which really works to elevate serotonin, too. So you get, again, you know, you don't amp up any one neurotransmitter. You know, again, it's like your life, you want it to be a beautiful symphony. You want to produce beautiful music. You don't want to have any one instrument amped up too much. You want to have everything working together. And so what we worked with this formula is to really have a concert of neurotransmitters working together on a subtle but noticeable difference.
But it works really well, John. I mean, I don't think I've ever let you use it. I'll have to give you a bottle of try.
No, I could have used it for the last 18 months that I spent going to court fighting for custody of Max. And
I'm sorry to hear that, buddy. Yeah,
I spent the last two summers in court, and let me tell you, I am a first-hand believer now in the ravages of elevated cortisol levels in the body and what they can do to you, because I watched it happen to me in utter shock and awe, and that, of course, added to the snowball effect of even producing more cortisol because I saw the effect that the prior cortisol had. So it was a big, huge ball of cortisol going on there. And yeah, let me tell you, that shit is nasty, and it works, and it proliferates and affects a great number of body functions and body attributes. So anything that can mitigate that, I would imagine, is a tremendous asset.
Yeah, I mean, it serves a function, of course, without a doubt. It has its good side, too. But, Dr. Nicholas Pericone, the guy who wrote the Wrinkle Cure, says cortisol is a death hormone. I mean, it really does cause catabolic wasting of the body, of the brain, as an example. And, you know, your brain is your master organ. I don't care what, it doesn't matter how many muscles you got in your body. If your brain is functioning, Dave, if it ain't sending signals to the pituitary and the hypothalamus to kick out the LH and FSH, nothing's happening.
Right,
you know?
Right, right. Well, you know, just in the knowing that bodybuilders, John, like everything with more in it.
Right.
Brian actually made me a special dose that I sell on my website. The Euphoria that I sell is double strength.
So, yeah, it's definitely extra strength.
Which
exactly.
A lot of people like, because you know what? They to a certain degree, the more you use this stuff, the more you feel it. You don't want to overdo it, obviously, because you'll fall asleep. But if you use it the right way, the way it's prescribed on the bottle, you really do get a very relaxing effect. And it's kind of a nice way to unwind at the end of the day, because sometimes, you know, you get the thoughts racing through your head and you just can't turn yourself off. A lot of bodybuilders tell me it's especially conscious bodybuilders, and it just works really well like that. Now, you remember back in the day, Brian, when GHB was legal and they used to sell it in the health food stores?
Yeah, my God, it was back in the 90s, that's right.
Back then, you know, there were companies that were making it, obviously, John. You know, we used to go to the store and buy it.
Sure,
Brian was making it himself in his house. Brian was like the master chemist back then.
You get to grab a butyrolactone and mixed it with lye and boom.
Sodium hydroxide. Lye had too many contaminants. I just used pure sodium hydroxide, that's all.
And gabibutylolactone? Wow.
He used to mix it with Crystal Light.
I made it for Dave and a few friends, and Dave seemed to like it. So, like, whatever. I'll just, keep hooking my friends up, basically.
It was, it was legal back then, so, you know, we didn't care about it. But he used to mix Crystal Light in with it, John.
He used to make a hell of a reaction that when you mix we use lye, but, you know, if you use the, when you mix the gabibutylolactone with the lye, it made, like, this huge bubbling, you know, we used to make it in a we used to do it in a 5-gallon plastic bucket, and it would just like a big volcano would erupt.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you could just take GBL straight and your body would do the same thing, which is probably easier, you know.
Yeah, I was always wondered that it was a pretty much accepted fact. You could just take the GBL. Why did we go through the whole hassle of making GHB when you could just take the GBL?
I think the anecdotal reports were that GHB was cleaner, I guess, that there was less, and because of the enzymatic conversion was in there, you felt it faster, and it didn't give you any kind of residual hangover. Who knows if it's really true, you know? Maybe it was some kind of, biased on someone's perceptions about it.
What do you think about GHB? I love GHB back then. I mean, I think, you know, the club guys really ruined it. That's really what happened. I mean, because this was something that had no toxicity on the body. I mean, it was being sold in a health food store. Everyone liked it. And then all of a sudden, the club people got a hold of it and they ruined it for everyone.
It was out for like 50, 60 years. I mean, you know, this stuff was over the counter, Dave, for like, you know, I don't know how long, before you and I were even born.
Yeah.
So it just seems kind of odd that all of a sudden, exactly, some kids began combining it and the media took hold of it. And, you know, honestly, they just created a witch hunt around it, because I think that if you look at the autopsy reports for those kids that actually died from, from drug intoxication, apparently there's really no medical fact tying that with the GHB overdose.
Right.
You know,
right.
But again, that's a political issue. It really is beyond the purview of my expertise.
It's exactly like steroids.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, let's not go there. Exactly.
That's another conversation we can have. We're running out of time here, Brian, but I just wanted to thank you for calling in and bringing back old times, although I want to get you on again because we got a lot more to talk about, I think, and I just want to let everyone know that Pure Life does make the euphoria that is available out there. You have a website. What's the name of the website?
My website is www.gabitrol.com. It's a milder version of the euphoria, but I think if you really want to get the hard stuff, if all your bodybuilders over 300 pounds like Dave, you want to go to his website, davepalumbo.com.
Yeah, we have a good supply of that stuff. Brian keeps us well stocked. Brian, thank you once again. And like I said, we're going to be in touch. We got some good topics to talk about. John and I like to, especially when all the show season is over, we like to talk about conspiracies and all kinds of crazy how the government is poisoning us type of stuff.
I gotta get out there. You're 45 minutes from me. I gotta come out there and see you sometime and catch up for sure.
Yeah. All right, man. Thanks for calling in.
Okay, guys. John, good talking to you.
This is Heavy Muscle Radio, only on RXMuscle.com. ALR Industries. ALR Industries products are backed by 3 decades of experience in the science and lifelong dedication to bodybuilding from its founder, Arthur L. Ray. In 2001, ALR Industries was created to give the hardcore bodybuilder the edge you need to build the perfect beast. Hyperdrive 3.0 is a synergistic blend of fat-burning herbs which yields the most potent, legally available formula on the market today. Hyperdrive 3.0 will burn fat, control your appetite, improve your mood and focus, and give you an energy boost you've never experienced. Restore blocks estrogen, enhances libido, and optimizes free testosterone. You'll be stronger, recover faster, and build muscle like never before. Then, fuel your workouts with the great-tasting and energy-enhancing Hyper Shot. Hyper Shot will boost your athletic performance to new levels, allowing you to train harder, improve your endurance, and get the most out of your time in the gym. Whining is not an option for those who refuse to accept mediocrity. Visit ALRIndustries.com today.
When you hit the gym, you set in motion a fundamental set of molecular activation signals and cellular growth mechanisms that deliver your desired gains in mass and strength. The magnitude of those processes, as well as how efficiently your muscles recover force production, can dramatically affect your net progress in a training cycle. Progenics protein supplements interact precisely and powerfully to amplify these pathways to produce enhanced growth responses of 100% or more compared to conventional whey protein sources. And they facilitate full recovery of force production in just 6 hours following the most grueling workout, allowing you to train harder, more frequently, for more dramatic gains. Experience the exclusive metabolic advantage available from Nature's Toolbox and Dr. Scott Connolly, renowned pioneer in applied dairy science and inventor of the original Metrex product. Go to ProgenicsSRG.com and use the code NBR801 to get 10% off the purchase of any single Progenics product.
When the world crumbles around you, will you be ready to fight back? Brutal Alchemy Performance Nutrition's unique line of supplements will help you win the war in the gym. Ancient Strength is a unique blend of three creatine esters which will infuse you with the ancient strength needed for the battle at hand. Isolation is a pure whey protein isolate that provides 26 grams of protein in every 29 gram scoop. Attack NO2 is Brutal Alchemy's nitric oxide booster that will increase your pumps and performance. After your battle in the gym, it's time for Onslaught, Brutal Alchemy's comprehensive post-workout drink, providing everything you need to suffuse your muscles, joints, and body with the components to heal, grow stronger, and return to the fray. And when it's time to conquer in the bedroom, you'll need Forged Steel, Brutal Alchemy's male enhancement product. Lead the charge to BrutalAlchemy.com to obtain the essential elements of your brutal transformation. Brutal Alchemy, it's better to be a member of the Horde than to be destroyed by it. German American Technologies. Compete harder with GATT supplements. Need energy? Gotta lose the fat? Jet fuel is the answer. Want to build muscle? Use Testogen to ramp up testosterone and start adding the size. How about some muscle exploding pumps and an enhanced training experience? You gotta get your hands on some Jet Fuse. GATT's newest nitric oxide training supplement that's guaranteed to work the second you try it. Join the team. Visit German American Technologies website now at TeamGAT.com. That's TeamGAT.com. German American Technologies. Compete harder. TeamGAT.com.
Get in D-Mix. That's D-Mix, the world's first energy pump that combines the most essential nutritional elements for overall health with efficiency. Cool and easy to use. D-Mix is the most powerful and unique multivitamin antioxidant energy formula on the market. D-Mix is a nutritional wonder that lasts up to 4 days. D-Mix is available in three delicious flavors: coffee, mint, and punch. Each flavor is designed to be taken on its own or added to other beverages. D-Mix. Don't drink. Just pump. Healthy energy.
Who are the Iron Sirens? The heroes: Susie Curry, Adela Garcia, Jenny Lynn, Crystal Richardson. Who are the Dark Divas? Gina Aliotti as Diva X, Jen Gates as Shade, Liza Kamstra as Black Lotus, Sonia Gonzalez as Raptress, and their story is told only in Iron Sirens. Iron Sirens is a one-of-a-kind, limited-edition comic book series and is the brainchild of J.M. Mannion. Order your copy of Iron Sirens today before they're gone. Visit IronSirensComics.com. That's IronSirensComics.com to get your copy of Iron Sirens. Iron Sirens. Iron
Sirens. RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up-to-the-minute news and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com.
Heavy Muscle Radio. This is Kevin Lavroni, and you're listening to Heavy Muscle Radio, baby, with Dave Palumbo and John Romano.
This hour of Heavy Muscle Radio is brought to you by Progenics. Visit ProgenicsSRG.com.
All right, our next guest placed fourth in the super heavyweight class at last year's NPC Nationals. Now he's preparing for the 2009 NPC Nationals, which is going to take place in less than 2 weeks' time down in Hollywood, Florida. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome Trey Brewer to the show.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
Trey, I know you're you got to be sucking it up, man. Less than 10 days. I think we're down to 10 or 11 days, right?
Yeah, man. I'm ready to get it done.
Trey's one of the most laid-back guys, John, I've ever met. I spent a day with him down in Atlanta or Smyrna, where he's from. And he chills, man. He chills. He just goes about his day. He's got his regimented schedule, and he's good, man.
That's what I always liked about Trey. He gets away with that because he's so freaking huge. You know, he just be chill, laid back. You know, I don't have to get there in a hurry. You know,
how do you do that? How do you not let things bother you like that?
Man, I don't know. You know, I think I've just been through a lot, so I don't worry about stuff no more. You know, so I just chill, relax, and just do what I got to do. You know, have fun, though. You know, so.
Because he knows the damage he could do if he got mad, and you know what kind of legal expenses those would lead to.
But not even about getting mad. He's just very laid back about what he's got. He knows what he's got to do. He's got the schedule, and he doesn't let things bother him. You know, and that's a good way to be as a bodybuilder.
I do. You know, I got my schedule. I know what I got to do. You know, I don't beat around the bush. I take care of business. You know, and keep going.
Cool. So it was. Well, let's talk about that. How's the training going?
Training's going real good. You know, like I said, I mean, what, we're 10 days. So, I mean, pretty much, I mean, train this whole next week. And then, you know, we're still going to, you know, go down to the show Monday night, you know, towards Hollywood. So, I mean, pretty much this last week of training. So, that's it.
From the video we put up, it looks like you're still training pretty heavy. I mean, you're doing like 600-pound, you know, deadlifts or bent over rows or whatever those were. Are you gonna sort of back off now, or are you going to train heavy right up and through the show? What's your strategy?
I mean, I don't know. I told myself, like, we did back again, you know, like the other day, and you know, we did T-bar rows, and I was like, well, I'm only going to go up to like 5 or 6 plates on T-bar row, and we ended up going up to 10 plates. So I try to go light, but it just don't end up happening.
This guy is I was down there with him, John. He is seriously strong. They made a special set of dumbbells for him, 275-pound dumbbells.
No way.
He rows those with ease.
I've never seen 275s.
That's like the Ronnie Coleman dumbbell they have at Metroflex.
Yeah, they're pretty ugly, but it works.
Wow.
It's, you know, I don't think that when you were preparing for the Junior Nationals, you were training that heavy, were you?
Oh, no. I mean, like I said, you know, we at that point, you know, we were doing more rep type stuff, but, you know, it just definitely doesn't work for my body. So went back to the heavy stuff, and you can tell, I mean, you'll be able to tell when I step on stage, it's made a big difference.
Now, you're being, Ahani is helping you out for this show with your diet prep, right?
Yeah.
Now, you're not using his FST7, obviously, because I know that they don't lift that kind of weights in that, do they?
Yeah, I mean, we still incorporate, you know, certain exercises that I do, you know. So we still add stuff in here and there, you know, and then he'll take it out and then add it back in. So, I mean, when I talk to him, you know, we communicate and see what I'm doing and what I'm not doing. And then he'll tell me to add it in for this exercise or take it out. So, I mean, we still do it, you know.
So you're throwing some extra sets in at the end just for some,
Exactly. Like finishing moves, like cable crossovers. Mm-hmm. This last week we added the, you know, the sevens in, and then for hack squats this last week we added the sevens in. So, right. You know, he still plugs it in and then he'll take it back out. So,
yeah, because you have the kind of physique, you know, and not to compare myself, I don't have a similar physique, but I had to train heavy. You know, I always trained very heavy up to the show. I know Ronnie did that too. When you have a very massive physique with a lot of muscle, sometimes the biggest mistake you can make is trying to do the reps and taking out the meat and potatoes of what brought you there to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you said, with my type of muscle and even Ronnie's, when you have that thick, dense muscle, I mean, you have to hit it hard to stimulate it, you know, to keep making it grow. And I think when you have that thick muscle, you have to do that, you know. And like I said, I've tried the reps, you know, and it doesn't work for me. And like I said, mentally, you know, when I train heavier and I feel good, then, you know, I think, you know, mentally you feel better too.
Yeah. Let's go back a little bit to a younger Trey Brewer. You must have lived the dream life in high school, man. You were most kids have such a hard time in high school. You know, they're getting picked on, they're ugly, they're gangly, whatever. You're this massive guy on the football team. You know, I'm sure no one picked on you. But I think everybody wants to know: did you also have game? Were you like macking the cheerleaders? Were you like, did you have it all going on in high school? He was the homecoming king, John.
I mean, I can't really brag on myself, but, you know, I'm not the type of person. But, yeah, I mean, I was prom king. I was homecoming king. I was Mr. OHS, which is our high school, you know, the, you know, head guy. But I had fun, you know what I mean? And I was a cool person. You know, everybody knew that. So, you know, and I had a very diverse school I went to. And so, you know, I had, you know, many friends from, you know, to blacks, to Hispanics, to whites, to Asian. I mean, you know, I got along with everybody, and that, you know, that's I think who made me who I am.
And I have to back that up, John. This guy can talk to anyone: black people, Asian people, Spanish. It's like everyone feels comfortable with this guy. It's unbelievable. It's a gift, really. It really is a gift.
Yeah, because they don't want to piss off. They don't know what I am, so they're just trying to figure me out.
Right. Too, all they know about you is they don't want to piss you off.
They think I'm Italian or Hispanic or mixed or whatever, so I think that's why I get along with everybody.
What are you? What nationality are you?
I'm actually Native American.
Really?
Indian. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Indian. What tribe?
Oh, I'm not a part of my tribe. My dad is, though. He goes to all the tribal stuff, and I've been with him a couple times. So he does all the dancing and all the stuff.
No,
so
I didn't mean that. I mean, like, what sort of faction of American Indian is in your blood?
Cherokee.
I didn't know your father. I talked to your father for like 2 hours. I didn't know he did all the Indians, that all that dancing stuff.
Oh, yeah. He's got all that regalia and the outfits. And, man, he goes, you know, like I said, I've been to a couple powwows with him where they're out there dancing and all the tribal stuff. It's pretty cool. But, yeah, he loves it, man.
Do they smoke the peace pipe?
They do. I don't know what they do. All kinds of stuff. they do all kinds of stuff. So it's definitely cool, though.
What about your mom? What's her nationality?
She's Native American too.
Oh, really?
She's a mixture of Creek and Cherokee. Yeah.
So you're a full blooded American Indian.
I wouldn't say full blooded, but I'm up there. Yeah.
Well, you know, never know it by looking at you.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get that hair going, dude. You know, if you look at his face, you could kind of—he does have a little bit, but, you know, you're right. There's a lot of mixed blood in you, but that's cool. I mean, you should celebrate that heritage. Maybe they'll let you open up a reservation casino or something like that. You know, down there.
Yeah, my dad's real—he's real big into it now. He gets into it, you know. So.
You know, don't laugh, Trey. You know, everybody that's part of the tribe—you get a cut of those lotteries and casinos and all of that.
Yeah, my dad does a lot of research, and like I said, I don't know the whole thing about it. He knows, and I mean, so I don't know the whole extent of everything. So I think he tries to figure all that out.
You get a check every month.
Yeah,
you get the check from BSN every month. You get that too. No, but it is pretty cool. I mean, a lot of people probably didn't know that about you. I didn't even realize that, and I spent the whole day with you. So.
Yeah, a lot of people don't, you know, but, you know, it's really,
I would never have guessed that. But I'll tell you one thing. Trey's got two great parents. I mean, they're very, very supportive in everything he does, and I think that goes a long way to helping him to be the guy he is. Tell him a little bit about the way your father got you into lifting when you were really young.
My dad was a world record track and field guy, and I know he talked to you, Dave, about all his stuff, and so I think that's where I got my mentality of training, because I remember going out to the track with my dad, and he would literally like put a car tire behind him with a chain wrapped around wrapped around his belt, and he would pull us around the track. I mean, just crazy stuff, you know. And you know, and just the way he trained, and eventually I wanted to start training with him, you know, and so he let me start doing stuff like that, and then we got into the weights, and kind of all started off there, you know, so he, you know, he really got me into it.
You know, it's also interesting, you know, Trey's father had throat cancer when he was a younger man, and mm-hmm. after he beat that, that's when he started getting into the track and field, he told us, right?
Yeah, he had a real tough time with that, you know, throat cancer, and, you know, with the treatments and the hospitals, and you know, of course, he's got a hole in his throat, and his voice box was removed, and they told him he'd never be able to talk again, but, you know, he somehow, you know, talks, but of course, you know, you could tell, I mean, something's wrong, but you can actually still understand him, you know.
He doesn't need he doesn't need one of those synthesizers.
He
oh, really?
Nope. Wow. Little hand things, you know, so he can actually talk, you know.
That's amazing.
His father's got, now I know where Trey gets his killer instinct.
Iron will.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
you know, and just seeing him and, you know, and I don't know, when I was talking to you, Dave, you know, my dad was like, well, I never pushed my kids, and that's you know, I told dad, I said, why'd you lie like that?
Yeah, you mean you were pushed?
And it's not that so much he pushed us, but nothing was ever good to him. You know, like I said, in T-ball, I hit 3 home runs. He was like, why can't you hit 4? You know what I mean? So he was like, you can be better. You could have done that. You know, I scored a touchdown in football. He's like, well, you could have scored 2 more, you know. So it's not like that he was strict, but he was like, hey, that's not any good. You got to be better. You know what I mean? So that's what, I mean, we always kept training. We trained year. I mean, you know what I mean? So that's what gave us the push.
And that's a lot of pressure to live under. Also, you know, from your father, especially, you know, telling you, you know, you just won the game for the team, but you could have done better, you know. How did you deal with that?
It is, and he still does it today, you know, even the bodybuilding. He's like, well, you could look better. You could have done, yeah, you know, so, I mean, it is a lot of pressure, but, I mean, it's true. If you want to be good, I mean, you gotta perform.
Can't rest on your laurels.
So do you think that the pressure that he put on you and still puts on you is actually good to help? It's helping you get where you have to be. Do you resent him for it, or do you actually, you know, thank him for it, or
I mean,
both?
I think it's good. I think it's good and bad, because I do want him to say, hey, you know, hey, good job, I'm proud, but right. You know, but then on the other hand, if you can improve, he's going to tell you. You know what I mean? I don't want somebody always saying, well, oh, you did an awesome job. You did an awesome job when you didn't.
So
you
like,
know what I mean?
So like when you win the Olympia, is he going to say like, hey, that was really good? Or is he going to say, well, you know, could have done better?
I guess when I give him some money, he might finally be like, all right, yeah, you're good.
That's all right. That's all right. When you're supporting him, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So. But you know, like I said, I think it's definitely good, you know.
Well, where are we at now with the training? What are you weighing now today? Do you want to disclose that?
I mean, I'm still sitting 260.
Oh, good.
260, 261. So I mean, you know, I'm still, you know, holding my weight pretty good.
So what do you think you'll be in 10 days?
I mean, I ain't no telling. Once, you know, drop the water and carbon up, and like I said, it's my first time working with Honey, so I don't know what we're doing, you know. So I guess won't really know until weigh in or until showtime, you know. So.
Well, I think that, you know, when it was, I think it was about 3-4 weeks ago I saw you, you were about the same weight, and you looked pretty freaky, you know, dry and hard. You probably didn't have to drop that much. You know, you may be at this stage where you're actually putting on some muscle. A lot of times this happens the last couple of weeks for guys, especially when they're young. So you may be losing weight but gaining it in muscle, so that's why you're not changing.
Like I said, when we trained back the other day, I mean, I felt so strong. Like I said, we went up 10 plates, which, I mean, stupid being a week and a half out, whatever we are, 10 days out from the show, you know what I mean? But yeah. I don't know. I don't know if it's because I just want to win or I you know, so.
You can do that when you're 24, Trey. You can get away with it. You can't do that when you're 44, but you can do that at 24 and get away with it.
Well, I hope I'm not doing this while I'm 44.
If the bills are coming in, being paid, you might be doing it. You never know. What kind of other things do you like to do aside from bodybuilding? You know, I kind of got an idea of it. I know you're into cars. Tell everyone what kind of cars you're driving now.
I got a Cadillac Escalade, And then I also just bought a new Chrysler 300. So I'm a definitely a car fanatic.
Got some good rims on that, too.
Yeah, but I got a 22s on the Escalade, and then I just put the 300 in the shop, and just got a new front end, grill, headlights, taillights, tinted windows, and got a 22s ordered for that, too. So
pimping it out.
Yeah, so...
I like it.
You know, I love cars. I love old school. I was just looking up, like, old school Chevy Impalas. That's probably going to be my next project. I'm going to build one up, you know, the old school.
Yeah.
Riders.
Do you know how to do work on cars?
I don't, but I know, you know, I got some boys that do all that stuff, gotcha. Custom stuff. And so, you know, but I definitely like, you know, doing the car thing. And, you know, and I'm a big, you know, family person, too. So just, you know, when I'm not training or whatever, you know, we always have people over at the house watching football, having cookouts. Or sometimes we might go out to eat having 15 people, you know what I mean? So, you know, we just go out and have a good time, you know.
That sounds like fun. What about, you know, coming into the Nationals in just you know, less than 2 weeks, who are you looking at that might give, or are you looking at it that way? Are you looking at it like someone is going to give me trouble? I got to worry about this guy. I got to worry about that guy. And if you are, you know, who would those guys be?
I mean, to tell you the truth, I really am not worried about anybody. I mean, I'm not down on anybody, you know what I mean? But I can only worry about and focus on myself. And that's the only thing I can worry about.
So how do you mentally sort of prepare yourself for that, knowing that you're not going in there alone? I mean, there's going to be competition. How do you mentally filter them out and just concentrate on your focus?
Because, well, one thing that I never do, I never go on the internet. I very rarely open a magazine, you know, getting ready for a show when they're hyping people up. I don't go on the message boards. You know, so basically I don't really know who's coming into the show, you know what I mean, unless, you know, my friends talk about it. But even then, I'm like, you know, I'm just worried about myself. So I never know, you know, who's coming into the show. And I think when I do that, I mean, like I said, I just go into the gym. I train because I want to be the best. And like I said, I've always done that. You know, it doesn't matter who's in the show. I want to be the best. I want to win. It doesn't matter who's going to be in there. And like I said, I can't control who's going to be in there. I can't. The only thing I can control is me and my training.
Now, you happen to probably be one of the few, you know, guys in the show that have a major support of a supplement company behind them. That's got to be make you feel a little better, I guess, about yourself and a little bit more important, I guess you could say, because, you know, not many people in this day and age, especially with the way the economy is, has the support of someone like you do with BSN. How important is that to you?
It's definitely important because, you know, it's tough when you don't have sponsors and, you know, everything's coming out of your pocket, and especially, like you said, during this economy. You know what I mean? Anytime you're worrying about money or stressing about money, you know, I mean, anytime you're stressing, that's always messes with your body and your mind. So when you know coming into the show, you know, I really don't have any worries financially or anything like that. You know, I don't have to worry about anything. You know what I mean? I come into the show and, you know, everything's taken care of and I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to stress about nothing. And so it is a big, you know, especially with BSN. I mean, they're always, you know, checking up on me, taking care of me to make sure everything is, hey, you know, everything good. Can we do anything? So, you know, they're always there helping me out, too.
Yeah, I mean, not many other companies do that. I mean, you're going out to the Nationals, I think, on Monday, right?
Yeah, we're going. I'm actually driving. I'm not a big flyer, and I don't like dealing with the airport stuff, bringing my food and,
sure,
you know, and BSN already booked I'm staying at like a little extended stay hotel, you know, so they've already booked that. And so that way I can stay away and just, you know, just chill and relax those days leading up and cook all my food and just chill and get ready and physically and mentally prepare myself.
Yeah, I got to just mention one thing about your food, because John, when I was down there, Trey doesn't put anything on his food. Puts like, he just eats it plain. He's no seasoning, nothing.
Yeah.
Why do you do that?
That's just something, like, especially on my steak and stuff. I never really enjoy steak sauce. The only thing I put seasoning on is my fish, and I'll put like garlic, you know, garlic, minced garlic, which really not too much, you know what I mean? And that's really about it. And I don't know. I mean,
not even salt? It's hardcore, man.
Yeah, no, I mean, I never really put anything on it, so it's like,
wow,
I just eat it.
That's Jay Cutler style, man.
That's worse, I think. That's worse, yeah. Well, you know, we have a lifestyle. We've done a couple of In the Iron Asylums with you, Trey. We have the back one up. We have arm one up, which people really responded very favorably to. It was actually one of the most viewed. Those two videos were two of the most viewed videos on our entire site. We have your leg training coming up this coming week. And then we have a lifestyle video that I shot with you down there. We're putting that together right now. And I got to tell you, John, you guys are going to really get a kick out of it, especially the barbershop scene with Trey. And the girl in the supermarket.
I think the barbershop and the supermarket one, they're going to really enjoy.
Yeah, what was that girl's name in the supermarket again?
I don't know. You got her number, didn't you, Dave?
I think she gave me her number, yeah.
She gave her number to you, not Dave. That's useless giving it to Dave.
She's quite a lot of woman, John. I'll say that. I'll leave it at that.
I mean, it's good that you got her number.
And those women love Trey down there.
Big black women? Yeah. They like you too?
They love him.
Oh, thank you.
They love him.
That's a good feeling.
Trey has women just come up to him on the street all the time.
I'll bet. Dude's living like the dream life, man.
Well, you know, I really, like I said, Red Trey, I just want to say that I really respect what you're doing down there. I saw you in action. You're a hard worker and you're a good guy, and everyone seems to like you. I didn't hear one person say anything bad or insinuate anything. And you know what? I think that goes a long way in this industry, and I think you're gonna really do well at this year's Nationals. I think that you're bringing a look that I think people were expecting to see maybe last year. And I just want to wish you the best of luck.
Well, you know, I really appreciate it. And, I just want to say thank you to y'all. Y'all did a good job. And like I said, I know, you know, we've talked. So, you know, I just, you know, want everybody to know, you know, I do give. You know, some people just think I just sit around and do nothing. But, you know, I give 150% at anything I do. My training, I'm very focused. And I'm very driven. And, you know, and I want to be the best. And, you know, I'll do whatever it takes to win. And that's just the type of person I am. And so I just, you know, thanks to all my fans and family and friends and everybody else that's stuck by my side through my ups and downs. But, you know, that's what makes a true champion, that can, you know, go through the ups and downs and come out on top. So
you said it perfectly. And we'll see you in about 11 days from today down in Hollywood, Florida. That's Trey Brewer. Thank you, man.
Thank y'all.
Thanks, all Trey. Right. Take it easy.
Bye. Yeah. We'll see y'all.
What a great guy he is. I mean, John, I'm telling you, I really, really enjoyed myself when I was down there in Atlanta with him. And he, you know, he's like, he just said it perfectly. He summed it up perfectly. He will do anything and go to any extent to win. He's not afraid to work. He's not afraid to suffer. He's not afraid to sacrifice. And that's the mark of a champion.
That's why I've said all along he's going to be a Mr. Olympia one day.
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible to say that that's a very, very, you know, great compliment you're giving him. I definitely know he'll be a pro one day, whether it be this year or next year. I don't know. With the amount of drive he's got, if he can bring in 100% conditioning, you know, he might squeak. He may be our 2009 national champion. Don't count him out, man.
Well, you know, I think one thing everybody forgets, maybe it's due to his enormous size and, you know, how far he's gone already in this business, but he's a young guy. He's a young kid.
He's 24.
He's 24. Give him a break, you know? I mean, a lot of guys, you know, Ronnie Coleman didn't win a Mr. Olympia till he was 34, you know? Yeah, so yeah. He's in a great position in this industry. And if it's not this year, it'll be next year. It's going to happen. If this guy maintains with the work ethic and the drive that he has in his genetics, and he maintains and continues to make improvements and doesn't get hurt, he's young enough that he can outlast these guys, and he can definitely climb that ladder and be one of those top guys, if not the top guy.
And you know what? I got to tell you, after, like I said, that weekend I spent with him, I understood why BSN signed him and why they invested so much money in this guy. Because, like you said, not only is he young, but he's a guy that's going to work. He's not going to sit back and expect a paycheck and not want to do things for them. He's never once not taken a phone call from me. He's never once not cooperated with me in helping to make all this coverage happen. And like I said, that's a guy who will earn a buck in this industry for the rest of his life if he wants to.
Well, and that's exactly the kind of guy that a supplement company wants repping their line. Yeah, because, you know, I've seen him in action. I've seen him at the BSN booth. He's great with the people. He talks to everybody. Like you said in the interview, everybody gets along with him. He never gets tired of signing autographs or getting his picture taken. He's always in a good mood with the fans and the people in the industry. So you got a front man like that for your company. That's exactly the kind of guy you want.
You said it, man. And I want to thank BSN for their sponsoring all our coverage of the 2009 Nationals. We'll be putting tons of coverage up down from Hollywood, Florida. And I got to just tell you, Brian Cunningham has been bugging me to come on the show. And I knew he was going to be a great guest. I was going to try to save him for after the contest season because I figure we have better, you know, that's when we usually do our crazier shows. And it's just a slot opened up and I let him slip in. And I'm glad I did, because Brian, we can have him on 10 more times. He's an interesting guy. And he's like us. He hates conspiracies. He hates government, you know, subterfuge, and you know, we have a lot of history together, as you saw.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, I learned something new about you, Dave, every day, and I think I know you. But yeah, he was great, very very bright, very intelligent guy, very eloquent, good talker, and I'm positive we've only scratched the surface of that iceberg. Oh, so
I can guarantee that, and I can guarantee that you've only heard like a fraction of the Mr. Dr. Mike stories as well.
I want to hear more of the Dr. Palumbo stories from back in those days, or the almost Dr. Palumbo
stories. Yeah. Dr. Mike always used to tell me, he used to say, "Nah, Dave, I have this friend, he was a shot putter, he went to med school, he dropped out to be a track coach, that's what he really loved to do." And, you know, it was funny, it was a foreshadowing. I kind of wound up dropping out to go to become a bodybuilder in a sense,
right?
But I think Dr. Mike really wanted to not be a doctor and would have preferred to have been a bodybuilder, but I think he was kind of forced into that lifestyle by the way he was brought up and the fact that, you know, he was such a smart guy as a kid. And that might have been his ultimate destruction, that he wasn't really doing what he loved, even though he was making money as a physician.
Yeah.
So, you know, everyone's got to find their place in life. And I always tell people, if you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life.
Exactly.
You know? So we don't really work, do we? Is this work?
Not to me.
Nah, I enjoy it, even though we don't have any free time to do anything else.
Dicking around with my car is work. This is fun.
I was impressed to hear that you actually repaired the guy's boat in the back of your house there. And Max got a free fishing trip out of it.
Max got a fishing trip out of the deal. That was cool.
I get impressed with that kind of stuff because I can't fix stuff like that. So to me, that's like algebra, you know?
Yeah, I can fix anything. If somebody built it, I can fix it.
Well, like I said, the keeping that confidence in yourself is what allows you to keep doing that kind of work. And speaking of fixing things, you've fixed up the studio over at the warehouse very well, so much so that I think we're going to be in there in another week or two. So I want to thank you for doing a great job over there.
Well, I'm doing that for us, bro. We're almost there. I mean, this week I will finish it. I got just a little bit more carpentry to do, and then we got to put up the rigging for the lights, and that's it, man.
That's
we're
great.
Done. It needs a major cleaning. You know, we got to clean up, and then we're done.
We'll get Diego to clean it.
The graphics went up this week, as you know.
Yeah.
And that made everything.
I would like to be sponsored by RX Muscle for the cleaning.
If you clean up, we'll throw you.
Mr. John, this is serious shit.
I'll throw you a jug of Creolize if you clean the studio up for us.
Can I have the Thermalize to go with the free Lipolize I got?
We'll give you a good deal.
Only if you win your class.
You can pay free $99.
Yeah, that's right.
I do it.
He's in.
All right. Well, John, we're at the end of our episode here. I'd like to thank our guests, Brian Cunningham and, of course, Trey Brewer for stopping by. Until next week, remember, with Heavy Muscle Radio, the truth hurts.
Heavy Muscle Radio is a presentation of RXMuscle.com, the truth in bodybuilding. Tune in next week at the same time for another round with Dave Palumbo and John Romano, only on Heavy Muscle Radio.